our city council meeting for the city of Grover Beach. It is a virtual meeting, and this is Monday, November 8th, 2021, and it is 6 o'clock. This is our call to order, and given public health conditions and consistent with Assembly Bill number 361, meetings are being held by teleconference only until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website, as well as on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the course of the meeting by calling in at 805-321-6639, and that phone line is open. So with that, I will move into our moment of silence. And I did want to take a moment to remember Vern Dahl this evening. So he is a Lucien Maur school board member who passed away last week very suddenly. So while driving back from Sacramento. So if you would all hold a moment in your hearts and say a moment of remembrance for Mr. Vern Dahl. Thank you, everyone, for that moment of silence. Let's turn to our city manager this evening, Mr. Matt Bronson, for our flag salute. Sir, if you would lead us in the flag salute, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My pleasure. Hand over your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you leading us in that flag salute. So now I will turn to our city clerk and ask for a roll call, please.
Okay. Councilmember Miller currently has technical difficulties. We'll let you know when she joins. Councilmember Robert?
Here.
Councilmember Rushing?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Here.
And Mayor Lee?
Here as well. So we do have a quorum, but as our city clerk did mention, we do have one member who is having some technical difficulties. So we hope she will get those resolved momentarily and will join us as we proceed through the agenda. So let's turn next to our city attorney, Mr. David Hale, and see if there's any closed session announcements that need to be shared with the council before we proceed any further.
Thank you, Mayor. We do not have any closed session announcements this evening.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and bring it back to the council for our next item, which is agenda review. So at this time, the council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or ask questions of the city manager regarding the order of the day. And depending upon the outcome of that, we should adopt a motion to present either as published or amended. So let's see if there's any questions of the city manager by council members. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you have a question regarding the agenda review. Seeing no one unmute themselves, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion to proceed as published.
I will make that motion.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, a second by Councilmember Robert. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries, and we'll let the record show that Councilmember Miller has not joined yet. But that will take us to our ceremonial calendar, which we have no ceremonial calendar this evening, and same with our presentation calendar. That will then take us to our public comment, where at this time the council will listen to public communications with additional communication if necessary after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council that is not already an item on the regular agenda tonight. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. If anyone wants to call in under public comment, please do so at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn to our city clerk with the first announcement that I do see Councilmember Miller has joined us. But I'll turn to our city clerk to see if there's anyone on the line for public communications.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment at this time and bring it back to the council for the next item, which is the consent agenda, where we have a number of routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. So let us check to see if there's any members of the council that have a question for staff on a member of the or an item on the consent agenda. Go ahead and unmute yourself. It looks like Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Yes, I do.
Bear with me. I apologize, Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Let me turn to Wendy Sims and to Mr. Bronson. I'm seeing on the screen the AGP video, a video conference notification. So I'm not sure if that is channel 20 or if that is the live feed, but it is basically just still saying that we're under video conference. So can we confirm?
Yes, the AGP and both John have our call-in number up on tiles so that they can be seen on channel 20 and hopefully can be seen on slow span. As people talk, one of those will go away as more cameras come on.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. I just want to make sure that we were actually live on the locations that we need to be live on. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright, I apologize for interrupting you, but it sounds like you may have a question on the consent agenda.
No apology necessary. Thank you very much. I actually just had one comment, and that would be on item 2 regarding the award of the design and engineering services for the sewer upgrade.
Very good. Let's see if there's... Okay, go ahead and make your comment.
Okay. I just wanted to thank staff for revising CIPs 5001 and 002 to better use our city funds. I appreciate them taking the time and the effort to do that. And so I just wanted to give them a little shout out for that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that. Let's see if there's other council members that have questions before we go out to the public for public comment on the consent agenda. So go ahead and unmute yourself or raise your hand if you do. Not seeing any remaining questions. Let's turn to the public, see if anyone has any questions or comments on the consent agenda. If you do, please call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll turn to our city clerk to see if there's anyone on the line for public comment on the consent agenda.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I'll go ahead and bring back, close public comment on the consent agenda, bring it back to the council for consideration of the consent agenda.
Well, I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Very good. We have a motion for anticipating approval of the consent agenda by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, a second by Councilmember Roberts, and I will second the comments of Mayor Pro Tem Bright with regards to item number 2 and combining the two projects and saving city funds and making both projects move in expeditious fashion. So, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Robert?
Yes.
Councilmember Miller?
Here.
Councilmember Rush? Sorry,
yes.
And Mayor Lee?
Yes. Very good. So we do have a consent agenda that did approve or did pass 5-0. So we'll close the consent agenda and bring it back to the order of the day, which is the public hearing item next, which we have no public hearings tonight, but that'll take us into our regular business, which is item number 7, which is a summary and confirmation of council direction on the land use element and development code update. And as I introduce Community Development Director Buckingham to introduce the item, I'll invite members of the public to call in at 805-321-6639 if you want to speak on this item. Mr. Buckingham.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and council members. tonight's meeting is really just, again, to receive a summary and the confirmation of the initial council direction we received at our September and October workshops that both went very well. And this is on the land use element, our development code update that we're in the midst of to implement our housing element. MIG Consulting is been assisting with us, and Genevieve Charo has been running our previous workshops. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to her tonight to give you the summary.
Thank you so much, Bruce, and thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council, for having me here tonight. And I'm going to open my sharing tray to share my screen. And want to confirm that you're able to see that tonight. Great. So thank you. Tonight, I'd like to go back and review a little bit of the rich discussions that we've had over the last couple of months. We had a couple of really great workshops with the Planning Commission and City Council that provided really great direction on this project, which is an implementation project from the housing element. It's a really critical piece of it, and it really has an overarching lens of looking at the land use and the development code to remove existing constraints for housing production in the community. Let's see, there we go. To start, just the agenda of what I'd like to review tonight is I'll go over the process that we've done to date, the state laws that largely drove or at least prompted this project, and then kind of five topics that are intended to remove barriers to housing construction that we've talked about in the past, but where we might need a little bit of additional direction from City Council moving forward. So we'll end with some next steps that we'll undertake and a little bit of inspiration about future implementation as well. So back at the outset of the project, we spoke to local developers and architects that really use the development code regularly and also invited input from local landowners and really got some great on the ground feedback on what's really working and what's not in the existing code. And we took that great feedback and reviewed the city's code and codes and plans, best practices that we know in discussions with city staff. And we developed a findings report, which was attached to the original meeting back in September and also to the packet tonight. And so during September and October, we revisited those findings that we had in the report and had those two great workshops with Planning Commission and City Council to get that direction on some of the major policy issues. So a key directive from the housing element is to reflect recent state laws in the revisions in the city's codes. So to that end, as outlined in the housing element, we have some specific changes that we will be making, and we've discussed these ones in the past, and they're all directed by state law. So I won't go into too much detail, but one new kind of addition that wasn't included in the housing element was a new state law called SB9. So we'll also be looking at how does that influence the way that we think about single-family zones and make sure that we're considering the development regulations that we're adding in that are objective and clear, and how does that pertain to single-family developments that now under SB9 are allowed to have a little bit more development on those individual lots. So finally, one of the big state law requirements that we looked at in the past two workshops is pertaining to the Housing Accountability Act. There's been a quite strong push from the legislature to push jurisdictions towards more streamlined approvals. The Housing Accountability Act does not allow cities to deny projects or reduce the density of projects if they comply with objective design standards. So these are residential and mixed-use projects. If they comply with these objective design standards, the city's somewhat hamstrung in denying those projects. So we used that as the lens and looked at these five key topics, which we'll review again tonight, to kind of get us towards those objective standards that will be the result of this project. So the first thing we talked about was the development review process. So this is the process that a project must go through to get through approval with the city. So currently, most projects receive what's called a development plan approval. And in conjunction with that approval, it's, staff or the Planning Commission has to make some findings that can be considered subjective. You know, is it compatible with the neighborhood? And subjective is generally, can two reasonable people come up with a different result out of that same kind of conclusion? So the Housing Accountability Act is really trying to guide us towards these objective standards in order to streamline that process. So to that end, at the September workshop, we talked about thresholds that to consider for projects that could go through a ministerial process and other projects that would continue with the development plan process and go through Planning Commission approval. And so we got initial direction from City Council to apply ministerial approval for all objective design standard compliant projects. So this would be all residential and all mixed use projects. So just a note, in the past, Grover Beach has not denied very many projects at all. I think only three of like 120 projects in the city, residential projects in the city, have even been appealed to council, and even those were not denied. So just a note on kind of previous context. But a change like this would really remove Planning Commission from the majority of decisions. And so if council ultimately wants to allow some projects to go through a ministerial project process, but other projects to retain that level of discretion, there are a few alternatives that staff could recommend. So staff would recommend establishing a threshold to streamline smaller projects through that ministerial review process, but then allow some larger projects to go through that existing development plan process. So in particular, staff's proposing a few different thresholds for different types of projects. Residential projects, any project that has four units or less, could be streamlined through this process. Mixed use projects could be any project with nine units or less. The city could really incentivize development on West Grand through a threshold like this, recognizing some of the smaller projects could get through very easily through that process. And then also, we want to consider incentives for deed-restricted affordable housing projects. So where projects provide a percentage of housing that is deed-restricted to affordable housing, to at an affordable level for very low or low-income households, those could also qualify for this ministerial review. So then projects outside of these thresholds would be discretionary and then would go through the Planning Commission public hearing, public comment process. So additionally, we heard from Council and Planning Commission pretty clearly that we want to really make sure that we can have a focus of incentives on West Grand Avenue. So in particular, the current code allows for a five-story height limit in certain locations on West Grand Avenue. And we heard direction to expand this area, the length of West Grand Avenue, as indicated in this map, and also to allow for ground floor heights of 15 feet to support that commercial development and an active pedestrian environment. We also heard from council the desire to create a new incentive structure for what we were talking about at the time as affordability by design. And so we talked about, I think it was in the September workshop, about a process called fractional density. So with fractional density, smaller units are counted as a fraction of a density unit. And so this really does incentivize these smaller unit sizes. We talked about this during the workshop, largely with respect to West Grand Avenue and the downtown areas. And so we'd like further direction from council if council would also like to apply this methodology to other residential areas in town to encourage affordability by design there. And very closely linked to that density discussion is always a parking discussion, because parking tends to very closely drive site design. So we heard from council a desire to focus parking reductions. So, you know, the number of parking spaces required per unit and reductions there, to focus that on West Grand Avenue. And to do that first, because that's where we kind of want to really incentivize development. But we also heard support for multifamily districts and having some parking flexibility in both multifamily districts and in planned developments. So we wanted to just get a little bit more input from council on that piece as well. And so here's just a couple of examples of recent planned developments on the left under the existing PUDs column, the two images, two recent projects there. And so in general, what we're seeing in the typical lot sizes is three 2,000 square foot units, essentially. And so with incentives like flexible fractional density, it's possible now to develop more smaller units for essentially the same total bulk and mass. So where before you could get 3 2,000 units, 2,000 square foot units, potentially you could get 6 1,000 square foot units. But again, the link is often that fractional density plus the parking. So generally these smaller unit sizes that come up with these other models, as you see in these images, are linked to one parking space per unit. We also talked about other design standards, and this is where a lot of the focus of our work over the next couple of months will lie, is looking at the design standards by development type for single family, multifamily, and the residential and commercial zones, and developing these very, very clear objective standards. In the single family zone in particular, we don't see very many changes at all. The one big policy change that we proposed, we've already discussed in previous meetings. So within the single family zones, there was an existing subjective finding in certain areas of the city, about half the city that supplies, that a project to add a second story can't substantially obstruct views from adjacent properties. And that's a very tricky subjective finding to make. So the direction from council was to instead consider a very objective standard that constrains the second story to a percentage of the first story. So that's kind of the limit of really what we see changing in the single family zones, with the exception of looking at how SB9 will pertain to those zones. We also discussed a feature that's not directly code related, but also influences project viability in general, just because of cost, and that is street improvements. So we confirmed with council a modified structure where additions and remodels can complete what's called a temporary conform. So the space between the curb and the new street, recognizing that there is this funding mechanism with the K14 bonds that will be implementing new roadway improvements. So in order to, because we know that that funding source is available and the streets will be improved, this is kind of a leveling and just common sense update to not impose those fees on projects when we know that the K14 project will complete those fees moving forward. We also discussed the undergrounding of utility lines with a similar focus on reducing fees for applicants. And we heard from council a desire to remove the requirement to underground. There's two different lines that we talked about. We talked about the primary line that comes from, that runs down the street, and the secondary line that serves each individual house. And we talked about, we heard from council that we would, that the desire to remove the requirement to underground the primary line in areas of town that haven't already undergrounded. But there is one point that we wanted a little additional direction on the secondary service line. We didn't establish a threshold in the last meeting. We'd like, staff has proposed a new threshold on the secondary service line, whereby projects that are have additions of greater than 500 square feet of habitable space must underground, but those less than that size are not required to underground that service line. At the last meeting, we also discussed options for an inclusionary housing ordinance and a variety of different affordable housing tools that could be considered in lieu of an inclusionary housing ordinance. And at the end of the meeting, council indicated that an inclusionary housing ordinance was not the direction that was desired at this time, but was looking for more information to determine a direction about what to do about affordable housing here. We heard some support for affordability by design through this process and some consideration around affordable housing impact fees, but we didn't have full on clear direction on that yet. So just on affordability by design, the objective design standards and incentives that we're developing through this development code update are really intended to target this, to create more smaller, more affordable by design units. And there's a lot of pros that go along with this option. It's really easy. There's pros for both the city and the developer. For the city's perspective, there's no additional tracking. It's very administratively easy. It's simple. It's fluid. It's flexible. You can integrate it into larger projects, or an entire project could be affordable by design. And that's really the key benefit to this tool, as well as the fact that unlike some of the other tools, this really doesn't have a potential to stymie development because it is not imposing an additional cost on private development. On the con side, it does rely on developer interest entirely to choose this pathway. So we must create, you know, the appropriate incentives that guide folks in that direction. And also, even if units are created at a level that is affordable today, it's not guaranteed to stay affordable into the future without a deed restriction. And probably most importantly, you really can't achieve the deep levels of affordability of, you know, very low income or low income generally either, which are arguably those units that are of the highest need. So council also asked for a little bit more information about affordable housing impact fees. These types of fees generate revenue for affordable housing by charging a fee on new development. So these fees can be placed on new market rate housing or on commercial development. But importantly, this tool does require an economic nexus study in order to establish what the appropriate fee level is. So the pros and cons of this one, the fees are really a very effective tool in creating affordable housing because they create a new dedicated funding source to support this development, especially in the development of very low and low income units. So this option allows for affordable housing to be built by a developer with experience in constructing and operating affordable units. So it can really make a significant contribution towards affordable housing projects, which often require a layering of different sources of funding. And this kind of gap financing from a jurisdiction can really make the difference. And because economies of scale exist in larger scale projects, these projects can be less expensive just on a per unit basis to produce and operate than units that are located throughout at a community, and certainly administratively less difficult for the city to track as well. But the major drawback to this tool is that impact fees can increase the cost of development. And so with that increase, there's potential to reduce residential construction if certain projects can no longer pencil because of this additional fee, and kind of a trickle effect of hindering economic development. Another consideration is that impact fees do result in affordable housing kind of concentrated in a few individual projects, because these funds will be consolidated and then used by affordable housing developers in particular projects throughout the community. So for next steps on affordability by design, we're addressing it through this project. On affordable housing impact fees, staff is seeking a little bit of additional direction. The path does require development of an economics nexus study, and there's some timing nuances to consider as well. In 2021, there is a comprehensive development impact fee evaluation scheduled, so council might want to wait until that kind of comprehensive look at all of the fees is done to decide on whether or not to also include in that process a nexus fee for affordable housing impacts. So I have listed here kind of the four topics on which we would like additional direction from council. The first is about the process that developers go through, the projects go through either a by right ministerial process or the more discretionary process, and what those thresholds are that are most appropriate. So kind of the direction that staff is looking for tonight is, would you like to apply the ministerial review to all residential mixed use projects, or would you like to use the thresholds that staff has identified or different thresholds for projects to go through this very streamlined review process? The other questions about fractional density and with quite closely linked to that, the parking reductions. Should we really think about that on Grand Avenue only for this time and potentially reevaluate it later for multifamily districts? Or would we like to look at this comprehensively citywide with a fractional density policy that applies citywide and correlated parking reductions that make that fractional density work? With regard to utility undergrounding, we're seeking direction on that 500 square foot of habitable area as a threshold to underground the service line. And for affordable housing impact fees, we're looking for direction on next steps, either to direct staff not to establish the housing in lieu fee impact fee at this time, or potentially defer that decision to summer 2022 when that comprehensive look at fees is going to be undertaken, or direct staff to solicit proposals now to prepare that nexus study so that we can better understand what that impact fee would look like. So on to our next steps. We're going to be quiet for a little while as we draft the development code revisions for public review. Those drafts are anticipated to come back for public review in spring 2022. During that time, we'll also need to do CEQA documentation, environmental review. The development code update is considered a project under CEQA, so we'll be doing that review as well. And then coming back for public hearings anticipated in the late spring, early summer. So subsequently, there'll be additional measures as well that are outside of the development code update project. But these topics came up through the engagement with stakeholders and our partner, Jim Hyde, who's on the team, who's had some just really great ideas about how to really elevate Grover Beach from a development perspective and make Grover Beach very appealing for developers. So on implementation, certainly there's the fee updates that I mentioned previously, and not just the affordable impact fee potential, but kind of comprehensively looking at all of the fees, understanding that that is a key consideration in development costs. In addition, we also talked, I think in the first meeting, about potential changes to the CIC zone, and that can also be explored more in the future as another opportunity. But critically, there are a number of marketing initiatives that are proposed in the findings report that are really intended to best position Grover Beach for the future and to draw development and exciting uses to the city. And to that end, one of the key ideas and thoughts is about kind of a reimagination of West Grand Avenue. So in conjunction with those marketing initiatives, West Grand Avenue just really has significant potential for this full reimagination. And so to end this presentation, I'd like to just leave you with a project that the scale doesn't quite match in terms of building height as Grover Beach, but it reminded me of the potential that exists on West Grand Avenue to really make the street a place where folks want to stay and play and gather and activate. And so I just wanted to leave you with just a little bit of inspiration moving forward too. So this project is in San Diego. It's 14th Street Promenade in San Diego, similar width of a street to West Grand Avenue, but of course, very different scale of buildings. But this street was reimagined in a way that I think is interesting because it really focused on a promenade kind of development style. So really using the most space as possible by activating one side of the street rather than both sides of the street where you would just get a little bit, they were able to get a significant part, which is really able to activate, put in public art and other different exciting things. And so this actually was built, and you can see the resulting change, which I found pretty effective and really is drawing people to the streets and using the space as an active space. So just a little bit of fun inspiration to end the presentation. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Sherrill, for that moment of inspiration at the end of the presentation. Very nice presentation. So let us first check in with council members and see if there's any questions on the on Ms. Sherrill's presentation. So, and as we're coming, as we're all coming back, I will invite members of the public to call in at 805-321-6633. 39, and I will turn to council members to see if anyone unmutes themselves for any specific questions. Let's start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Thank you for that presentation. It was very easy to follow. What you're expecting of us is very easy to understand, so I particularly appreciate that. So I just have a couple of questions regarding specifically the inclusionary housing impact fee section. And I'm not sure if maybe this is you or staff, but I'm sure you two guys can figure it out. I understand that staff successfully secured $250,000 grant from, I believe, the state. And I'm wondering if those fees would, or that grant would be able to, we'd be able to spend those on that proposal, or if we were to go forward with an affordability gap study or whatever we want to call it. So that's one question. Shall I give all my questions now, Mr. Mayor?
I'd say go ahead and let staff respond to that and then just kind of have that interactive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Wright, it is a possibility. I can't recall exactly, but I believe that the funding is tied to ultimately, if you were to adopt an inclusionary housing ordinance, you have to demonstrate again that it had some impact on facilitating housing production and that it would be effective. So I think the answer is probably, but it would ultimately depend on the ordinance that would be considered.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And then in the findings report, the executive summary, where they discuss considering fee revisions to incentivize smaller affordable unit construction for affordable projects, and specifically payment deferment until the certificate of occupancy is issued. Are these the items that we would discuss when you bring forward the fee update in mid-2022?
I would say yes. That would all be part of the fee discussion. There already is a housing element policy that talks about going towards a impact fee that's based on a square footage. So a 500 square foot residence is not paying the same as 1,000 foot. So that would be one of the significant changes. As far as fee deferral, I mean, that's something that really can happen currently. And, you know, the council, although it wasn't a residential project, you've deferred the collection of development impact fees until occupancy on a hotel project. So that can also be done for residential projects as well.
So rather than on a case-by-case basis, we would actually write that as an ordinance or a code or?
Yes, ultimately that would be included in your new fee schedule. It would talk about that. And under state law, it's consistent with state law because the impact associated with providing water and sewer and so forth to a new residence doesn't occur until you actually have occupancy. So again, it's a common tool, but that would be clarified, and how that would be enforced, if you will be part of the new fee ordinance.
Thank you. And then my last, I think, question would be then regarding like the TOTs for short-term vacation rentals. If we were to decide that maybe that is something we wanted to revise, would that also come forward at that time?
The council could revise your... I don't think it would be part of your development impact fees. That would be a transit occupancy tax fee, which is established by... the last initiative of a maximum of 12%. So I think the city attorney can weigh in, but if you wanted to raise that, it would take a vote of the people.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Mayor Pro Tem, the TOT is a tax. So you'd have to go through basically a Prop 218 process for implementation of increasing it. If you wanted to decrease it, that would be a different story. But I'm not quite sure what you meant by adjusting it.
Well, it was just one of it was just an idea that was put forward. And mainly I'm just trying to determine if those things are going to come back to us at a specific time, or is that something that the council needs to initiate? That's kind of what I was getting at here. Am I making sense?
Okay. Nope. And perhaps Mayor Pro Tem Bright, let me ask a question of either the city manager or the city attorney. Since that's not part of the development code, perhaps we should have that discussion either under council communications or council questions towards the or committee or council member items towards the end of our meeting tonight. Is that a more appropriate spot, Mr. Hale or Mr. Bronson?
That would be an appropriate approach to structure your comments related to the council member communications. And then if it was your choice to give some direction to staff, you could do so at that time.
Okay. I think I would just add that if there was council direction regarding the timing of looking at a housing impact fee, that is part of this agenda item, and that direction could be received with this agenda item. If the council is looking at additional funding opportunities beyond the impact fee, to Mr. Hale's point, that is a separate discussion, a separate direction at a later date or a later time in this meeting.
I would agree. I thought you were referring to the TOT, but I would agree with what.
Okay, and maybe for said. Maybe a question for Mayor Pro Tem Bright is just for clarification, because I think I was under the impression you were talking about the transit occupancy tax as well, not an affordable housing fee or something like that. So maybe you could clarify for me if you would.
Yes. So my last question was specifically in reference to short-term rental, vacation rentals, TOT. If in fact we wanted to I was just asking, is that going to come back to us? Or is that something that we need to, if my colleagues agree that we'd like to revisit that, that's something that we would need to request happen. Am I making sense? I make perfect sense to myself.
I think I understand. And if I heard Mr. Hale correctly, that would be a separate discussion, even though it is short-term rental associated. I think it would be associated with the TOT initiative and the Prop 218 process.
I got you.
So it would be outside of this particular process.
Okay. That's and the correct. Only reason I asked was in that executive summary. It was part of the findings report, and so I just wanted to kind of get that out there before it slipped my mind. So thank you for the direction. I appreciate all of your time in this. And that concludes my question.
Very good. That was a good clarification question, though. So let's see if other council members have questions for Ms. Shero or for staff. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you do. Looks like Council Member Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll put these questions out to the ether and see who wants to jump on them first. First, on our first little section here regarding ministerial rights, specifically on the affordable housing projects and the 25% threshold. Council received some notes earlier today concerned about the size of that threshold, and I was really curious what comparable communities of our size and our density have been doing in the past, if we have any data that compares us with folks and what those thresholds look like across the board.
So I'll jump in first, and then Bruce can probably follow up with a few answers too. So I think that we often see these kind of thresholds for ministerial review linked to single family or multifamily. The affordable housing is kind of an additional incentive that we don't often see, largely because most folks will use the density bonus provisions to go through that process. So it's linked to the state density bonuses and provisions there because there are so many incentives that are associated with that. And so, you know, that's kind of something to think about, is how the state density bonus would play into two projects. And because it is so often used, we don't often see this in a threshold from in other jurisdictions.
Okay. Awesome. Two other questions, if we have some time. Regarding fractional density and residential neighborhoods, just making sure what the specific short-term and long-term implications of that would be. Specifically, we're talking mostly about parking requirements for residential zones. Is that correct?
Correct. So it's kind of linking, if we use fractional density to really make it effective, we also need to consider those parking rates. And can you actually achieve those fractional densities, you might need to adjust your parking.
Work hand in hand. Okay, got it. And lastly, regarding impact fees, if we were to choose option two using the consultant that we're using later in the year, would that be a significant increase to what we are already paying that consultant for those studies? And how would that relate to doing a one-off study?
I think either way, there's a cost of doing this economic study for the housing impact fee. There might be some small synergies if you're hiring a consultant who's also updating your development impact fees to be looking at that, but they are somewhat separate types of studies. So while there may be a small cost savings in doing it together, it wouldn't be significant.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
The one consideration is when we are developing that affordability gap, so that difference between what a market rate unit is and what a lower income family can afford, we are considering the total cost of development. So, if we do it now and you're basing it on current development impact fees that will change, you may want to change it then. So there's that.
That's a nice perspective. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you for those questions. Let's turn to either Councilmember Robert or Councilmember Miller to see if there's any questions from either one of you. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I've been having a lot of tech issues, so I missed a good portion of that presentation, but I read the report. I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Councilmember Miller. Or excuse me. And then now Councilmember Robert, if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mayor. No questions. I had two questions, but Dan covered those. So, excuse me, Councilmember Rushing covered those. Thank you.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. And most of my questions were answered as well. I did have one more question probably for Mr. Buckingham in the fact that we've been going through this process, and I think it's very apparent from our discussions that we are heading down a path of continued friendliness towards housing production and development within objective standards, but also within making sure that the character of our community is maintained. So with the initial conversations that we've been having, what interest has been generated from the development community? Is there been a significant change, or are we talking to ourselves?
Well, staff has been communicating this to any potential developers as well, but I think the best example I can give you right now is a current developer has a property in escrow for a redevelopment on Grand Avenue, and that developer is so interested in the potential changes and is probably listening tonight. If you move forward with this, they may delay the design of their project until this ordinance were to take effect next spring because of the benefits of the project. So I think it's a great example about, and this goes to both the height and the density equivalency, because at that point they can get a lot more units without having to have an increased density. So I would say that it's already paying dividends amongst developer speak.
Very good. I appreciate that. Perhaps it generates one question, which I'm anticipating will have our city attorney squirm for a moment, but I'll ask the question and see if there's realizing what you just said, Mr. Buckingham, is that there are folks in the development community that are anticipating this coming in the spring, depending upon where it finally resides. What avenues do we have as a city to say this is what we anticipate? Start the process, and once it's implemented, then that becomes the kind of the vesting section. I'm assuming it falls under the category of it's not approved until it's approved, And so there is some risk there. So, but maybe perhaps either yourself or Mr. Hale can opine on what process that or what that could look like.
You are making me squirm. I think if I understand what you just said, you haven't anticipated legislative actions that you're going to adopt in the form of specific ordinances that would allow a different kind of design of housing, and you want to allow developers to proceed with that process now. Is that correct?
I would say hypothetically to start the process, not to complete the process.
If we weren't issuing entitlements, we could look at that, and I'm not sure I have a high discomfort level with that. You're actually talking about issuing entitlements prior to the actual adoption of that legislative action, then we'd have to talk a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't, that would be even too squirmy in my seat for myself. But just to kind of see if there is, realizing that we still have a lot of work to do on this, just to kind of get a flavor of what that would look like. So hypothetically, we'll leave that out in the ether and see by a show of either unmuted mics if anyone else has generated questions off of that. If not, I'll go ahead and turn to our city clerk and invite folks to call in at 805-321-6639 for public comment on this item. And I'll turn to our city clerk to see if there's anyone on the line for public comment on this item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Okay, very good. So I understand we did receive several written comments that we can put into the record as part of the conversation this evening. Those will be made available. I think some of those were made available as part of supplemental items that have been included on the website. So I will go ahead and close public comment on this item, bring it back to the council for discussion. And through the beauty of technology, I believe Mr. Bronson is going to have our IT folks change out their slide and see if we can bring up Ms. Shero's slide that has the images of what you're looking for from us tonight, so we can kind of all be aware of kind of where we're going next. So I don't know if that's a possibility, Mr. Bronson, if you could bring that up. I did take a photo of the screen, so if not, we can track along.
Mr. Groden, is that ready to go?
Should be showing from my virtual camera now.
Oh, we do see it, I believe.
Very good. So it'll... I think it's a great opportunity to start there, and hopefully as folks can see that, we'll kind of walk through this as well. So let's start with our by right or ministerial review threshold discussion as the request for direction this evening. So there were, I think part of the discussion you see there is that, is this intended for all residential and mixed use projects or with thresholds? That are here. So residential at 4 or less units, mixed unit at 9 or less units, and then affordable housing. So with respect to 25% or greater of the residential units. And I did just get a notice from our city clerk that we did actually have someone who was trying to call in, but I did not provide enough time for that. So let me turn to our city clerk and reopen public comment for the moment and garner some public comment on this item with the council's concurrence. So,
yes, Adam, city clerk. We have Krista Jeffries.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Jeffries. I know you were one of the folks that did provide some written comment tonight, so appreciate your verbal comments as well.
Good evening, council members. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I just wanted to take a minute to verbally kind of reiterate the comments that I provided by email today and provide a little bit of background as to why I said them. Ultimately, I know we're accustomed to having a whole lot of notification and control and ability to speak into whatever development is coming into our neighborhood. And I think that's appropriate for things like heavy machinery and things that'll bring traffic and cause dirty air and things like that. But housing is ultimately about people. And it sounds very democratic to have a whole bunch of planning commission meetings and public meetings about what housing is going to get built. But ultimately, it's not. Allowing people who have housing to give the thumbs up or thumbs down on people who may or may not be able to move into their neighborhood, that's not democracy. And it's thwarted a lot of housing, even if it's, you know, going to be more objective and everything. It's just something that it slows it down. And if we're so concerned about the projects that come through our neighborhood not being up to scratch, then I think we really need to focus on the code and worry about that rather than the approval process. My most recent example is whoever bought Mr. Glenn's and has now basically flipped it into an Airbnb with nobody working there is like the most underwhelming and frustrating plan that I have seen in Grover Beach in a long time. That it's a prime place and he could have done so much more with it. And it was perfectly objective and went through planning commission and it completely sucks, if I may say so myself. So if we're concerned that whatever projects come through are not going to be good enough, then that's a problem of code and not planning commission or discretionary approval. If in light of all of these changes that we're looking at, upzoning and applying this perspective to residential housing, then I would really encourage members of the council to attend the Building Design and Construction Cluster for REACH this coming Wednesday. It's going to be at 9:30, and we're going to be discussing Senate Bill 10, which will allow cities to upzone areas on infill lots up to 10 units without CEQA. And it's a huge tool that has been made available to the city to help address our housing shortage. So please really consider all of these great things that you guys are talking about. I don't want to take away from the good work that you're doing. I just think it needs to apply to something other than Grand Avenue. It's a relatively small part of the city. It's important, but most of our housing is going to be somewhere else. And so I would love to see these principles applied everywhere in the city. Thank you for the work that you're doing and the time you're taking to pay attention to this, and hope to see more from you in the future.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Aptly timed at almost exactly 3 minutes. Nicely done. Let me turn back to our city clerk and see if anyone else has joined us for public comment on this item.
No one else on the line.
Very good. I'll go ahead and close public comment again and bring it back to the council. Mr. Gruden, if you would bring back up the other slide. Thank you so much. Let's go back to the question I was posing to see if the by right ministerial thresholds will start with the concept of whether it's in all residential and mixed use projects with no thresholds, or if there's a threshold that the council would like to implement. So let's see, I don't see Councilmember Bright, so I'm not sure if her hand is raised or mic unmuted. So, but if other members of the council would like to unmute themselves, Ms. Miller, Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mary Lee. So I would like to proceed with no threshold. I think if we, once we have the right standards identified and in place, we should be able to streamline the approval process. I don't know why we would want to make the process any more cumbersome than it has to be, so long as we have the right objective standards. Thank you.
Very good. Let's see if other council members want to weigh in on that. Councilmember Rushing.
I've been going back and forth on this one, trying to figure out what the right thing to do here is. But I think Council Member Miller did hit it right on the head. So long as we have the right back end in place for this, I don't see why we have to find essentially an arbitrary line in the sand. But I am certainly open to additional commentary from fellow council. Thank you.
You're good. I'll turn to either Mayor Pro Tem Bright or Council Member Roberts. And I don't see Councilmember Bright's hand raised, so I'll anticipate that is, oh, there's her mic did just go active. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, did you want to
Thank
provide you. Some commentary?
Yes, please. I too have been going back and forth regarding this. I don't know if I'm just old school or what, but I really do feel that, first of all, with the new standards in place, I don't believe that by having a review process, people will be denied the right to build their home or their project. We haven't denied any projects that I know of in a very long time. And I feel, though, that when we're talking about more than 9 units or anything in a large sector like that, I do believe that it is in the best interest of the public and the city to allow our residents to weigh in. If the codes are written properly and the project is a good one, then the project will go forward. But I do believe that it is very important that we do allow people to have their say. And so I think that's pretty much what I wanted to say on that matter. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that input. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Robert for his input.
I too, going back and forth. I'm going to tend to lean with Mayor Pro Tem Bright on the larger scale units. Let me ask you something. If we did away with this process, would there be no the review board? There would be no planning commission?
You would continue to have a planning commission for industrial projects, all commercial projects. Again, we're just talking about projects here that have residential units or in a mixed use comprise 75% of the project. So in your planning commission also is an advisory body to the council for code amendments and so forth. So this would reduce the number of projects coming to the planning commission, but it wouldn't eliminate their important role.
Very good. Thank you, sir. And also, would if we did away with the requirements, would this, as Mayor Pro Tem Bright suggests, that people wouldn't have a say at all? There's no notifications of what's going on residentially around you as we do now. The notifications would go away and the people couldn't protest against it?
Correct. If by right means it's a ministerial project, they would literally be submitting directly for a building permit. Right. And city staff can only condition those projects to comply with city codes.
Understand. Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. So that leaves us at a straw poll of 2-2. So now I'll kind of weigh in and either mess up the thought process completely or see where this lands to provide direction for staff. So. In the seesaw battle of going back and forth, as we all have been doing, so I am more, I would say, in the camp of Mayor Pro Tem Bright and Councilmember Roberts, in the fact that in my time in the development world, I've gotten very used to having tentative track maps versus parcel maps versus track maps, and that 4-unit threshold for residential units has kind of always been one of those things that has stuck with me as a kind of a dividing line of the size of development. And perhaps going back to Mayor Pro Tem Bright's comment, that might be a little bit old school, but that's kind of my perspective. But the other side of the coin there is, I believe our planning commission and our public commenters, when they do come out to a project planning commission meeting, it does have an opportunity to provide some input for betterment of a project. And I think, fortunately, our professionalism and the knowledge and experience of our planning commission continues to kind of craft and develop good projects, notwithstanding the Mr. Glenn project that went to Planning Commission and perhaps didn't rise to the level of best use and best and highest use of the property, but that it would have happened with or without the Planning Commission consideration. So I guess from a question to staff is, we have a straw poll that is inconclusive. We do have a majority that is more of the thresholds. So from a procedural standpoint, we can either continue the conversation and see if we sway one way or the other, or does the fact that we have a straw poll with a majority with the threshold requests give you adequate information to move forward, and then we'll have again this conversation at the approval process.
I would say yes, Mr. Mayor. I'll jump into this. While I believe the council generally strives for and achieves consensus by unanimity, at the end of the day, we're governed by the majority opinion. And ultimately, while there's no vote being asked for tonight, we're asking for direction. Direction can be taken by a majority of council members present this evening. We're not suggesting that may not necessarily need a motion to document that, but what I'm hearing based on the majority of council members is a preference for a threshold. Perhaps I might want to clarify a little more about what the threshold would be if that was indeed the consensus of at least majority of the council, but ultimately we will go with where the majority of the council wishes to go on this and other items related to the code.
And perhaps I'll weigh in and let the other two council members that were discussing the thresholds. I believe my intent was to go with the thresholds that were provided on the slide, with four units or less for residential, 9 units or less for mixed use, and the 25% affordability consideration. So let me turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright or Council Member Robert and see if that was their understanding as well.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well, Mayor, and Councilmember Miller and Councilmember Rushing, to both Karen, Mayor Pro Tem Bright's and Mayor's point is that the commission's never denied these projects, and they've made the projects better in many cases. So I think an oversight of some of the larger project is good for the city and good for the residents, and gives the residents an opportunity to voice their opinion, to give their right to speak up and not to stop the project, because the city's never done that. So that's my two cents.
Okay, very good, appreciate that. But let me turn to Councilmember Miller or Councilmember Rushing just to see if there's any other kind of constructive conversation we want to have with respect to that. I know Councilmember Miller, you're in the housing industry from a professional perspective, and you may have more information that you want to share. But I see Councilmember Rushing's microphone has come live, so I'll turn to him first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm gonna defer to some folks that have a lot more experience in this process, to be perfectly honest. Mr. Mayor, the amount of times that you've had to go through this process over the years, I can only imagine. And to Councilmember Roberts' point, it is important for our neighbors and the citizens of Grover Beach to have a say, especially on potentially neighborhood changing events. I think Councilmember Miller's point, and what I was really feeling most about, was the problem that while Grover Beach doesn't necessarily ever reject any of these applications, it's a timing issue. And at the end of the day, we're trying to get as many homes in place and in process as soon as possible. So whatever it is that we as a city can do to make sure that our citizens are housed and able to afford, I'm all for that. But if this turns into a process where the citizens of Grover Beach are don't have the proper say in a larger process, then that's just as big of a problem to a certain degree. So I will leave it there. You can count my straw.
Very good. Appreciate that. So, but that's the beauty of having having five different opinions up here, Mr. Rushing. So we do have that that opportunity to be individual voices. So before I turn to Mr. Bronson, let me turn to Councilmember Miller for anything else that she wants to add to the conversation.
Thank you, Mayor. And I agree with Councilmember Rushing. It certainly is a timing issue, especially when it's an affordable project linked to funding sources that have deadlines attached for the project to continue on. And that is the driving force behind my push to go without the thresholds. And if we truly have not denied any projects whenever they've met all of our objective standards, I don't see the need for us to prolong that process, make it more cumbersome by adding a review process to it. That's unnecessary. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that. And perhaps that allows for a, before Mr. Bronson speaks, perhaps that allows for a very interesting discussion under fractional density and parking restrictions. But I'll turn to Mr. Bronson for input on this. Oh, sorry. Then I'll come back to Mayor Pro Tem Wright. Mr. Bronson.
Thank you. Just very briefly, on the topic of timing, I definitely hear the council's interest in making sure the timing is as short as possible while still providing the required input. And just a reference point, in the most recent significant housing development approved, the Highland Cove project, about 19 units, that project went from an idea in a conference room around what that could be to entitlement in the Planning Commission in 6 months. That included all the staff review, that included the process, that included notification, that included review, 6 months from an idea of what if we could do this to entitlement by the Planning Commission. That's a process that virtually no other city can match, I believe. So I think we will work quickly. We always have. We're a very nimble, adaptive organization, and the Planning Commission works with that time frame in mind as well.
Very good. Recollection or good memory jog for us on that with respect to timing. So let me turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright for she had her hand raised.
Thank you. I did just want to say from a prior planning commissioner perspective, in the, I don't know how many years I served on that commission, we did come across several times when, because of the input from the public, it truly did become a better project. But I too am, as Anna said, I am, and all of us, I guess, we're all concerned about the timing process. So the fact that I really feel that we kind of have that part down, I do feel confident going forward with recommendations as the mayor has laid out. So thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that. And let me turn one last time just to kind of hopefully tie this up with a quick bow is for Mr. Buckingham to remind us what percentage of projects would kind of fall under these thresholds that we have. I believe it was in the staff report, but I wanted to let you kind of reiterate the fact that this would actually reduce the amount of projects that would go to the Planning Commission as a whole number, correct?
Yes, and I mean, when it just comes to residential projects, again, we don't see many projects over four. That could change with density equivalencies and some of these other things, but by all means, that would be the vast majority of projects we see now. Mixed use, quite frankly, we haven't seen any mixed use projects. And the idea of creating a threshold that was higher, and I'll tell you, these weren't necessarily recommendations. They were examples for council consideration about how you might categorize these projects. We believe, though, that a mixed use number should be higher because that's the project that's probably the most difficult right now to pencil, and that's a smaller infill lot on Grand Avenue that's going to be in this range of probably less than 10 units. And then finally, just in recognition, if you're going to have more affordable housing, there should be a different threshold. So,
very good. And notwithstanding Ms. Jeffries' kind of hope and desire to get us down to 5%. I'm comfortable at the 25% or greater with the affordable housing projects moving forward. So, okay, so I think we've got a unanimous consensus, but a consensus to move forward with the by right ministerial review thresholds as outlined. And so let's take that to the discussion on fractional density and parking restrictions. Do we want that to be Grand Avenue only, or also in multifamily and PD zones? So let's see if by unmuting of microphones, who wants to go first on this one? Apparently none of us do. So from that perspective, and then I'll turn back to Councilmember Miller because she just unmuted herself. Oh, now she's muted.
Okay, sorry. Thank you, Mary Lee. So the question is about, and that slide is super fuzzy here, fractional density and parking reductions. Do we want to apply that throughout the city or concentrate it to Grand Avenue, right?
That would be the question, because currently our direction was to just apply it to Grand Avenue. Is that correct, Mr. Buckingham?
Yes, and well, in fairness to the council, it was an extended conversation. We really didn't get to the how do we treat R2 and R3 zones. Do we treat them the same as West Grand Avenue or differently?
Okay, very good. So, Councilmember Miller, does that help your conversation?
It does. Thank you. It helps to clarify things, and I would advocate to apply it throughout the city. And that's to encourage kind of affordability throughout the city by applying this concept rather than just concentrating it in one part of town.
Very good. Okay, and next looks like Councilmember Robert has his hand raised, so we'll go to him next.
I agree with Councilmember Miller. And didn't the council already reduce parking, or was that a state requirement?
There were some changes to parking a few years ago as part of our parking regulation update. But quite frankly, one of the biggest changes was we finally said one bedroom units are only required to have one parking space. And they were two spaces previously, which was quite frankly ridiculous. So, you know, we made some adjustments and we reduced the number of guest parking spaces. So there was some progress made. But ultimately, there could be further reductions, especially if you're trying to tie this to affordable by design. If you're trying to get more units, and I say, yes, more units, but remember, the bulk or mass of the project won't necessarily be any larger. And my example I provide to the council is, you have R3 lots right now where you're getting 2,000 square foot detached houses, all with a two-car garage. Under the density equivalency, if they were 1,000 square foot units, you still have 6,000 square feet of total mass. Mm-hmm. The difference being, right now, if those were 1,000 square foot units, most 1,000 square foot units would be two bedrooms. So now, all of a sudden, you apply the current standard, you'd require 12 parking spaces on the site. That probably gets to be physically impossible. So that's the rub. While the density equivalency makes a lot of sense to drive affordable by design, the council is ultimately going to have to consider for that 1,000 square foot or again, 600 to 1,000 square foot two bedroom unit. Does that still have two spaces? You probably won't get the affordable by design. You probably have to go to one or one and a half spaces at most.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Very good. Appreciate that. So let's see. Let me turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright for her input.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Buckingham's explanation and information is exactly why I would agree to extending this to the R2 and R3 zones. Because parking takes up space. And if we can get to the point where we will, I know some of the examples in some cities, they allow on-street parking to be counted as one spot and that sort of thing. So that's the reason for me to want to support this throughout all the city, or the R2 and R3 zones. Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm also in support of extending this out to R2 and R3, but excuse me if this is just something I should know and just perhaps don't, but are these parking requirements extended to ADUs and JADUs?
Actually, no. The state and the council's adoption of the AD ordinance, we do not require parking for ADUs, so they would continue to be exempt.
Cool. That was what I thought, but I needed the clarification. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good, and I am in agreement with my colleagues as well with regards to the fractional density and the parking reductions applying to the R2 and R3 zones as well. And I'll just add one other potential supportive comment in the fact that the affordable by design tends to be either younger families or starting families, which probably have less vehicles. Which would be an opportunity to utilize the beneficial parking reductions to the advantage of the housing opportunity versus the parking opportunity. Plus, it would also allow for, I'll say, less room for ancillary RVs and boats and other vehicles to be stored in locations that aren't where we're hoping to have them stored. And so with that, it looks like we do have consensus on that one. So Mr. Buckingham, anything on fractional density and parking reductions that we need to clarify for you further?
No, sir. Direction is clear.
Okay. Very good. With the council's the word is escaping me, but with your concurrence, we seem to have an opportunity to where we are folks TV for the evening, and sometimes people like to talk to their TV in fashions that are not in direct step with our public comment process. And so with that, I have been alerted by the city clerk that we do have someone that does want to speak under the utility undergrounding threshold under public comment. So with your concurrence, I will go ahead and turn to our city clerk, reopen public comment for the last time on this item, and invite our public speaker to come in and provide his comments on the utility undergrounding threshold.
Yes, we have Kevin Jones.
Mr. Jones, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to your comment on the utility undergrounding threshold.
Hi, how are you guys doing? It's Jost, but it probably didn't come through correct. So I came in kind of late, so I was kind of hearing a little bit on you guys discussing the housing project stuff and that you guys want to push the new housing projects, kind of get them going through faster to make housing more affordable in this area, which, you know, I think that's a good project to have. But also I've had a lot of friends in that area that have purchased old houses. And they have the underground ordinance, which I don't disagree with the underground ordinance. I think that's a safe way to run utilities. But the problem is they'll do these old houses and they'll do remodel projects, and they get these underground ordinances that they got to kind of jump through the hoops through, and they end up being very expensive for them to complete the remodels, as far as, you know, if they're, especially if the overhead is running right through the yard or is on the wrong side of the house and they want to move their electrical, then it becomes very expensive, and PG&E doesn't have great pricing on that. So I think it just needs to be reevaluated. I think that it just needs to have an affordability limit. I mean, if you want it to go underground, it needs to be affordable, because at this point, if it's not affordable, then they're just not going to move the electrical. If it's affordable, then they'll move it. Or if they get help, then it's able to get moved. So I think it just needs to be reevaluated. And that's kind of what I wanted to say. I think it just needs to kind of, it would make old housing more affordable for people that want to get in now and do the remodels versus waiting for new housing to come in. So that's just kind of my two cents.
Very good. We definitely appreciate those comments. And I will turn to Mr. Buckingham for a moment. So, because Mr. Joes, I think you've come to the perfect spot in our discussion, because that is exactly what we've been doing with this evaluation of the undergrounding threshold and the underground requirements. So, Mr. Buckingham, if you could, in a couple sentences, kind of reiterate what changes we're looking to make to our underground utilities requirements and our thresholds.
Sure. Again, we kind of classify utilities under two categories: your primary, which run parallel with your streets, and then these service lines that go from the pole to the house. Council direction was very clear to eliminate our current ordinance, which requires those primary lines to be undergrounded under certain circumstances, as well as doing away with our in-lieu fee. So that was clear. The council also, when you talked about the service lines, indicated that you wanted to seek some kind of threshold so that, again, a small project is not penalized for having to underground those the service lines. So staff, in this case, was just, we looked at some other cities. It just so happened that Arroyo Grande has a threshold of 500 square feet as well. So our recommendation is, again, this would allow you to do a sizable development, whether your home is 500 feet going to 1,000 or 2,000 going to 2,500 square feet. As long as you stay below that 500 square foot threshold, you would be exempt from having to underground these service lines. And in this case, we're just kind of looking at a threshold or a nexus, I should say, that if you're going to spend, you know, $100,000 on your addition, spending a few thousand dollars for a service overhead service line undergrounding seem like that's proportional. So hence the recommendation of 500 square feet of habitable. And again, to clarify, this is, so habitable means living. We are not going to count garages or other types of improvements. It would have to be actual living space.
Very good. Appreciate that that clarification for our speaker, and just for confirmation purposes, Ms. Sims, do we have anyone else on the line for public comment on this item?
No, we do not.
Okay, then thank you, everyone. So I will close public comment one more time on this and bring it back for the council. With respect to utility undergrounding threshold, unless someone has a comment or suggestion with respect to moving forward, perhaps a thumbs up, thumbs down could go, but I see Councilmember Roberts, you wanted to speak on the utility undergrounding threshold.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, Mr. Buckingham, I know previously when we had the requirement, you dealt with each case individually, and if the costs were astronomical, you typically waive the fee. Would you do that in this situation too? I know 500 square feet is not a huge amount, and if someone were to have, say, a $10,000 cost to get it underground, would you have that option or that say to say, well, we can waive this fee?
I think it's something that we could consider in drafting the ordinance. Mr. Ray, our Public Works Director, typically deals with this. Perhaps we would want to include some language. It's difficult. Staff doesn't want to be arbitrary and capricious in making their decision. So it would be something we could consider in creating some kind of cost threshold or maybe just extenuating circumstances. I understand the concern. I think it'd be something that we would try to incorporate into an ordinance that would give staff a little bit of flexibility in trying to waive, if you will, when there is an unusual circumstance.
Okay, very well. Thank you.
And perhaps a kind of a clarifying question for Mr. Buckingham. So this utility underground threshold is just for the service lines. We're completely waiving the secondary lines, so that we are completely eliminating the primary service undergrounding. So perhaps to Councilmember Robert, in your experience, would that rise to a significant five-digit requirement on occasion?
Only in the case where a transformer that could be or a pole got to underground, were across the street of a busy intersection or something of that nature, if it was fairly close by, it would be not so substantial. But, you know, PG&E used to work with us really well on these. They actually gave us a certain amount of footage. But now, you know, their costs are gone up a lot, and the time to get it done has gone up a lot as well. Now, also, I would suspect that we'd be requiring the cable lines and the telephone lines to go underground as well. Is that correct?
Yes, those would all be defined as the secondary or service lines.
Right. So that's other costs involved in that as well. You have to run separate conduits for those. And those are typically 2-inch conduits, and they have to be away from the secondary electrical. So the cost can get pretty substantial.
Okay, very good. Appreciate the clarification. So perhaps let's see if other members have comments to weigh in. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Unmuted.
You are currently unmuted.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Buckingham's information did raise a question to me, and actually two. Can you tell me what the average cost per square footage is to build in this city?
Oh. It's probably now, I'm going to say, 200 to 250 minimum.
Okay, so let's, if you're doing a 500 square foot addition, we're talking well over, we're talking a good chunk of change. Okay, thank you. My other question is, if someone who was a resident who was adding to their home felt that the fees were exorbitant or far too high for them or whatever, can they not come to the council and appeal that?
Yeah, again, there's always an appeal process. So someone can always appeal. Let me take that back. If you establish a 500 square foot threshold, then that's the threshold. That is the code. What I was suggesting is staff could have some ability. Again, we would want to establish something that's more measurable and not arbitrary and capricious. But we could draft an ordinance that would include some language. And again, the council's going to get to see this draft ordinance before it ever takes effect. So you'll have more time to consider it.
Okay.
Right now, the key really is we just want this direction, A, so we can draft it and that we can take into consideration projects that may be in the process or coming to us soon.
Okay. Because my concern would be really somebody who isn't having to expend that much, those many funds, say they already have a shell and they're, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. But the fact that we can revisit this gives me a lot of comfort there. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Certainly. Let me turn to Mr. Bronson because he unmuted himself, so I'm thinking he may want to add to the conversation.
And I can appreciate the council's interest in still trying to help people through this as possible. Just as a reference, right now we have no threshold. Thou shalt underground. And we occasionally get requests coming forward. Typically, they're a couple hundred square feet. So they would be satisfied under this threshold. 500 square feet would probably take care of the vast majority of small, more affordable, one-off type of additions that the council would be able to relieve of this burden. So I think you'd be satisfying a great number of individuals through this relaxed threshold that you'd be establishing through this ordinance.
Appreciate that clarification. And so let me turn back and see, unless there's, again, comments from folks, I'm thinking this could be a thumbs up, thumbs down. And then if we don't have a consensus, we'll have more more conversation. So if you're in agreement to, to provide direction to eliminate utility undergrounding thresholds for primary lines and then for service lines, unless the addition remodel is more than 500 square feet of habitable area. Did I say that correctly, Mr. Buckingham?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So if you're in support of that, go ahead and let's do a thumbs up. Okay, cool. Looks like we have consensus on that one. Thank you, everyone. So that takes us to our affordable housing impact fee next steps with our options. And so I guess the question ultimately becomes is where does the council want to go on affordable housing impact fees? So let's kind of do a kind of a process of elimination. Does anyone feel the need to do a nexus study on establishment of an affordable housing impact fee prior to the master fee update next summer? If you do, please go ahead and unmute yourself and go ahead and provide your justification kind of argument for our consideration. Okay, not seeing anybody unmute themselves, we'll consider that we're not going to do a affordable housing nexus study at this time. So next we'll go to, by a show of consensus perhaps of, does the council want to proceed with a deferral of the affordable housing impact fee until the master fee study, in which case we would request that staff put the affordable housing impact fee impacts into the master fee study next summer or next spring when this goes out. So is that a fair way to put that, Mr. Buckingham or Mr. Bronson?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So it's going to be between deferring it until the master fee update or effectively not moving forward with a affordable housing impact fee at this juncture. That's basically our two options, correct, Mr. Buckingham?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. So let's try just from a consensus standpoint, who wants to move forward with a affordable housing impact fee study in our master fee update? Okay, I'm seeing that that's pretty clear direction that I think affordable housing impact fees are not in the city of Grover Beach's future. So does everybody agree with that? We're not gonna move forward with affordable housing fee study at this time, correct? Okay, so does anybody have any comments or information that they want to share about why they voted in that particular, or why they straw voted in that particular direction? Go ahead and unmute yourself. Otherwise, we'll consider that direction for staff and see if there's anything else they need from us on this item. Okay, not seeing anybody unmute themselves. I'll turn to Mr. Buckingham, Mr. Bronson, see if there's anything else that you need direction or clarification on.
No, we have clear direction from the council, and we'll use this information to draft the ordinances, which will then come back for public comment and your review.
Very good. So that is a kind of confirmation that we'll see this at least one more time. And before we end discussion on this item, I do want to see, I do see that Ms. Shero is still on the line. I do want to thank her and her staff for all of the good work for getting us to this point tonight and getting us through several public hearings, several iterations of public comment and clarification. And we look forward to seeing what happens when you come back in the spring after going underground and working for a while in hopefully in active hibernation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Very good. And I'll turn to Mr. Bronson. Looks like he has some comments to share as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate your comments to Ms. Shero and to our staff. This is really the end of Act One of a multi-part production. We're now at the intermission phase where there'll still be work going on, but we've done the initial heavy lifting. I want to appreciate the council's diligence. You spent almost 10 hours along with the Planning Commission and workshops back in September, October to really go through details on making our development code easier to build housing in our community. So thank you to the council. Thank you to Ms. Shero and MIT staff. Thank you to Bruce Buckingham and our staff. The next phase will come forward in springtime to help make this a reality. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bronson, for that. And with that, I have had a request for a 5-minute break. So let's take a moment and for a bio break, and we will return at 7:45. Thank you, everyone. Bring us back to session. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for that that bio break. I will return us back into open session from our break and proceed to item number 8, which is a homeless response update. And before I turn to Mr. Bronson and Mr. Hale and Mr. Our Police Chief Peters, let me invite folks to call in under this for public comment on this item at 805-321-6639. And I anticipate I'll start with Mr. Bronson.
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. I'll be presenting this homelessness response update to the council. I'm presenting this on behalf of a team of individuals. You saw in the staff report there are 5 department directors that are related to this item, which underscores the multidisciplinary role of this topic with our city and the degree of attention and focus that your executive team is spending on this topic. This is an informational update to the council that focuses on our actions and response on this important topic. So on this slide that Ms. Sims brought up, just to remind the council that housing and homelessness is one of your major city goals. This really was a housing and homelessness themed agenda to a certain extent. The last item was on the housing component to make housing production easier at all different levels across our community. This item is about homelessness. I've highlighted the section of our council goal that relates to homelessness, partnering with regional agencies and organizations to address homelessness and related sheltering issues in the city and region. That is the guiding parameter that staff uses to inform our work in bringing this topic forward and making progress. Next slide, please. So just for some background information, as the council is aware, we have a long history in Grover Beach of partnering with other agencies, most notably the 5 Cities Homeless Coalition, the County of San Luis Obispo, and other cities to address homelessness across our region. We've secured over $1 million in the last several years in community development block grants for housing assistance, namely eviction prevention security deposits for Grover Beach residents administered by the 5 Cities Homeless Coalition. You also secured in the last year another $450,000 in Special CARES Act funding in CDBG dollars for helping support the South County Winter Warming Center, homeless services, namely mental health services, and also expanding childcare, which is really tied to employment, tied to job opportunities across our community. As you may recall, for those who were here back in 2018, the city did declare a homeless shelter crisis, given the unsheltered population increases we were seeing in our community, but across the county. In fact, every city in the county and the county itself also declared this homeless shelter crisis because of the number of unsheltered individuals across the county. We have one of the highest rates of unsheltered homeless populations in the country in Slo County. And just to underscore this, homelessness is a challenge not just in Grover Beach, but in Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, Atascadero, Paso Robles, and the unincorporated county as a whole. It is a county-wide problem, and frankly, a statewide and national problem that we're all trying to address. And just for your reference, South County Winter Warming Center has been run on a temporary basis only over the last 5 years. And by temporary, I mean that there is no dedicated space. So it does tend to rotate, and it's based on the location where it will be feasible for a given year. That's not really a best practice in trying to have a winter warming center for unhoused individuals across our community. Next slide, please. So the city has two overarching goals with addressing homelessness. And I would say that this is a framework that the county and other cities are also using as well. We want to show compassion with enabling unhoused individuals to obtain services and housing. So the compassion is really the leading edge to help people access particularly housing opportunities to provide shelter and security. At the same time, we're also needing to ensure order with the maintenance and cleanliness of our public spaces. So compassion and order are the two aspects of our approach to homelessness across our county. Those are both very difficult propositions, but that's really the guiding force that we see. Access to housing is critical. It really is, in many ways, the number one impediment, given our high cost of housing, the relative inaffordability of our area. We have very low housing supply, higher and higher increased housing prices. In the council staff report, we cited a stat that we came across from Housing Homeless Coalition that said that there were hundreds of applications for only a couple hundred emergency housing vouchers countywide. That just shows the depth of need for housing in our community. We've taken a step forward as a city in partnering with People's Self-Help Housing in Haslow on this Cleaver property site that will allow for a 53-unit affordable housing project for low and very low-income residents across our community. So that's one step forward the city is taking on a much bigger challenge. Also, I wouldn't acknowledge that in the last few years, we have a new case law that governs our activities in the area of homelessness. This is called Martin v. Boise, or Boise, as we'll call it by shorthand. And it does a number of things, but the main premise for us is that it prohibits enforcement of camping prohibitions in public spaces if there's no designated space or shelter for them to go to. Now, there are some different legal definitions that Mr. Hale can go through further about what's camping versus what is sleeping, but the bottom line premise from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, if there's no shelter space or a designated public space for unhoused individuals to go to, we cannot remove them from public spaces. We can't forbid them from being in a public space and sleeping in a public space. That governs the entire Western United States. And that right there is a significant challenge for us in helping to navigate through this issue thoughtfully and decisively. Next slide, please. So we're focusing on three different areas tonight in this update. The first is a temporary emergency shelter that is coming to fruition over the next few months. This will be built at county property at the corner of 16th Street and Long Branch Avenue in Grover Beach. It'd be co-located with other public facilities as shown on screen, namely alcohol and drug services and the county public health clinic. It's what's called wraparound services that are right there on the premise. What's proposed is to install 100 square foot pallet homes connected to 24/7 on-site case management and client support. This concept has been used in a number of communities around California, including Sonoma, Redondo Beach, and other communities. And it is a way of providing ready-made temporary shelter spaces without building a big facility from the ground up, which takes many years and many millions of dollars. Next slide, please. This slide shows the site plan that is envisioned for the site. Roughly 20 units would be established, shown in orange, with a communal meal spot shown in green, along with bathroom facilities and shower facilities. So it is a self-contained facility tucked away behind the public health clinic and alcohol and drug services center. Next slide, please. This is a proposal coming to us and planned from the Five Cities Homeless Coalition with 20 pallet homes, which house 1 to 2 individuals each. The shelter area does include the different sites, as I mentioned. There would be security cameras installed, privacy fencing installed. Our police department would be on point in case there were security or safety issues, and we've been involved on the front end to make sure that we're minimizing the risks going into it. It'd be on a reservation basis, so it would not be a drop-in shelter. It wouldn't be a place people would just go to off the street, so to speak. They would be reserving a spot in order to secure this transitional housing for up to 90 days with the services and components all wrapped around. There would be clients from throughout South County facilities area, not just in Grover Beach, but there would be particular outreach within Grover Beach communities as part of this concept. Next slide, please. This is funded through federal CARES Act dollars that's been allocated to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, which again is the lead agency. They're the ones who would be operating and managing the site on county property, going through county permitting, with the city as a partner and champion, given the need for shelter space in South County. The Board of Supervisors has taken the first step of adopting an ordinance in September that would enable this to be used on a temporary basis for the next year. Installation is envisioned to occur in early 2022, and the facility will be operational through the balance of 2022 until the end of the year, unless there was an extension in the ordinance based on the results and impacts of this facility. And once this is up and running, this would be the first shelter space in South County, or the only part of the county that does not have a shelter space for unhoused individuals. And this is a milestone that we're hoping to move past through this temporary emergency shelter. So the next area to talk about is additional opportunities for shelter spaces. And this is more of a general topic just to inform the council of work that is going on right now. Over the last 10 years, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and other partners have been looking for spaces across our county, our South County, for temporary or permanent shelter spaces. But they have not been able to secure such spaces over many years, despite looking and seeking and working diligently across the area. Back in 2019, there was a concept for a facility at Hillside Church that included transitional housing, a winter warming center, and case management administrative offices. This concept did not move forward due to property ownership disputes and other reasons. And the funding that was coming for this concept from the State Housing Emergency Action Plan was reallocated for transitional housing in Pismo Beach and case management offices in Grover Beach. So the funding has been allocated to important uses. However, there was no winter warming center allocated as part of this, and that's still an ongoing need we have. I'll just mention the council, as you know, that you've allocated up to $800,000 of our $1.6 million ARPA funding towards the concept of a homeless shelter and facility. And we are working with the coalition to try to put our money together along with other communities, Rio Grande, Pismo Beach, the county, to try to find a way for us to make progress on a permanent shelter space. Under the lead of Five Cities Homeless Coalition, just know that your staff is working diligently on opportunities to help make this happen with any funding transaction ultimately approved by the council before it goes forward. Next slide, please. The last area I wanted to focus on is encampment cleaning, because we've talked about the compassion in trying to access services and housing, and now ensuring order of our public spaces is also part of what we're trying to do with homelessness. City is currently taking action as we speak on cleaning and trash removal at homeless encampments on public property along the El Camino Real 4th Street corridor. We did take action back in 2015, 2016, not only in this area, but also near the train station site on a couple of very large encampments that had grown at that time. We did a significant cleaning and clearing work at that time in a way that we cannot do in the same way now under the Boise case law. We have added limitations in what actions we can take. We can clean encampment spaces, we can remove trash, we can trim vegetation, but we cannot permanently clear encampments off of public spaces at the current time. We cannot forbid people from being in a public space at the current time because of the lack of shelter space. So with these limitations in mind, we're still taking action, and the El Camino Real area is one of those areas that we're focusing on. The pictures on screen reflected pictures that were taken just a couple of weeks ago in a couple of the spots in this encampment area, the wooded forest area, so to speak, off of the El Camino Real. The pictures speak for themselves. This is debris, this is garbage, this is trash, this is some property as well, and this is also a picture showing the water quality challenges that we face in this area with the wetlands in this spot, not to mention the fire danger, fire safety issues we face as well. Next slide, please. So what we've done in the last couple of weeks is secure a contractor to begin with vegetation trimming work that was done late October. We've now moved on to trash removal, and as of today, we are cleaning active encampment areas. We are following all legal requirements of noticing and storage. The picture on screen shows some of our notices posted on trees to make sure that we are posting where people can go to get their personal property. We have to store it for up to 90 days in an off-site location. We're also making sure that we are following the letter of the law when it comes to cleaning and trash removal. Again, we are not permanently removing encampments from this site. We're telling people temporarily, while we clean, we need you to vacate your spot on a temporary basis as we do our diligence in our public property areas. I will also mention that we're working very closely with the Homeless Coalition on outreach to affected individuals so that we connect them to services and housing where we can. And I want to commend the Homeless Coalition for all of their diligence working with our staff in helping to do this as efficiently and compassionately as possible for those who are on site. Next slide, please.
And Mr. Bronson, if I could interrupt you for just a moment, I just want to confirm with our city clerk, I did get a text saying that one of the screens looks like we are still on break going out to the public. So I just want to make sure that we are.
I think they're seeing the slide from AGP that's on our Teams. It's the same slide they use when we go to break on slow span. So they might just think that slide is, because I've checked with John with AG or with IT, and he says slow span is fine.
Okay, so slow span is good. And just for those listening, there is a screen that does show the call-in number, which is 805-321-6639. But it looks like we are active on slow span. And so, Mr. Bronson, I apologize for the disruption or for the interruption, but I'll let you proceed with your presentation.
No problem, Mr. Mayor. Actually, this is my last slide. Just to wrap up the encampment cleaning, we estimate that the cost of the work we've done to date in the last few weeks and the work that will be done over the next couple of weeks will be roughly $75,000 all told. That is not an insignificant amount of money in cleaning, removing trash, and trimming vegetation. The area has improved quite a bit, but just to know that this is a sizable sum that we are embarking on. We'll be looking at a mix of different funding sources for taking care of this work. Our plan as staff is to come to the council at mid-year with an appropriation request, not just for this work, but also future work that we intend to do going forward, most notably at Ramona Park. We intend to time work over there with the opening of the nearby temporary shelter coming forward so that we can time that work and steer people towards the new shelter space just a few blocks away. But we get in and do some significant cleaning and maintenance work that we need to do over at Corona Park. And then just lastly, reiterate that these cleaning actions are really important in helping to make sure we keep our public spaces as clean as we can while we still focus on helping to connect people to housing and services. Again, compassion and order, that's the mantra we're following. But just to close and say that this is going to be an ongoing effort. This is an emerging priority across the county, and this will not be a one-time deal. This will be an ongoing effort where we're trying to make progress on what is an intractable problem facing every community in this area and every community in California, arguably. But just to know that your staff is focused, we're doing what we can, and we're working diligently with our partner agencies to make progress on this issue for our community. And with that, be glad to take your questions and comments.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bronson, for that presentation. As we come back to full screen with the council for any questions, I will invite folks that want to call in under public comment on this item to do so at 805-321-6639. And let's see by a show of unmuting yourself if you have any questions for Mr. Bronson. I see Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. So thank you, Mr. Bronson, for the report. Much thanks to staff as well for taking the approach that demonstrates compassion and care for our unhoused residents. I did hear you say that there will be targeted outreach conducted for residents of Grover Beach. I am wondering if that also means the residents of Grover Beach will be issued a preference for the temporary shelters.
I have to be somewhat cautious with the response to this because it is a South County facility. And ultimately, while we will have some unhoused individuals located there, no doubt, we actually, by federal law, cannot have it be fully utilized for Grover Beach unhoused residents. One, because it's a South County facility, and two, because we are not part of the CDBG entitlement program as a county. We have our own non-entitlement program, and as a result, it has to be balanced with other jurisdictions across the South County area. So there is a limit, but we'll be working within that limit and doing the outreach that we can to help steer as many of our unhoused individuals as possible into this safe and secure shelter.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that question. So let me see if other council members, by unmuting themselves, have any questions. Looks like Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bronson, one question on the pallet homes. You mentioned that they can house one to two people. I saw that in the diagrams there were two beds in the space. Is that for two people that reserve the space together that are acquainted with each other, or is how does that work?
Sure. And actually, I'll start off and say that Jana Nichols, the executive director of Five Cities Homeless Coalition, is on the line and can speak more to the operations of the temporary emergency shelter. But my understanding is that the shelters, the spaces, pallet homes, would be housing one individual unless there was a couple or a kind of common household. Then they'd be co-located together in the same pallet house. Otherwise, there'll be individual units for each person.
Thank you.
Very good. Let me check with Councilmember Bright, or excuse me, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, or Councilmember Rushing. But I don't see either of them unmuting themselves. Councilmember Roberts.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for that report, Mr. Bronson. Yes, $75,000 is a lot of money. I think it's important that we do an effort of such value to help clean the areas up, because as many of us know, infections and diseases run rapid when they're not cleaned up. But I was also wondering, I know the funds are coming from several sources. Is there something a city can do, like a GoFundMe page that help raise money to do something like this, or something the city wouldn't be able to do with a Facebook page like that?
Thank you, Councilmember Robert, and fair question around how to fund this in the best way possible and utilizing community support. It is a complicated mix of funding sources. I think from the city's end, we are looking at using taxpayer dollars, general fund dollars where we can. ARPA funding is a possibility. We'll look into that further. The Homeless Coalition is also deploying some resources, and that is a nonprofit agency that could be a place for people to donate money to help support this shelter operation and other related services. So I think whereas a city itself wouldn't have a GoFundMe site, because we are part of a government agency and we're deploying taxpayer dollars efficiently, the Homeless Coalition may be a great spot to be able to donate money to help make a difference in this issue.
Very good. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Let me turn back to Councilmember Miller. You still had your hand raised. I wasn't sure if that was an additional question.
I do have an additional question. I just remembered another question I had. And I apologize if I missed this in the report, but I didn't see any mention of pets. I'm wondering how residents with pets will be accommodated. In talking with staff at 40 Prado, I learned that a lot of residents won't go to the shelter because they would have to leave their pets behind.
That's a great question, Councilor Miller, and the shelter actually will have a pet area for that very reason, to provide that flexibility.
Very good. I did have one question, and perhaps it's a more for an operational question with Ms. Nichols, I'll ask it and see if it's appropriate to ask for have staff answer or otherwise. On the map showing the layout, there is a gate that opens up onto Rockaway. I anticipate that is an emergency access or emergency point of ingress egress, and not the main point of access, as the access into the facility itself would be come from inside the county property parking lot. Is that correct?
That is my understanding as well, Mayor Lee, but I'll defer to Ms. Nichols to be able to speak to that further in her comments.
Okay, very good. I appreciate that. So let's turn, not seeing any unmuted microphones, let's turn to public comment on this item. I will invite that at 805-321-6639, and I will turn to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line to speak on this item tonight.
Right now we have Jana Nichols.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Always good to hear from you. So we look forward to your comment or anything you wanted to share on this item.
Thank you very much, Mayor and council members and city staff. It's a pleasure to be with you again this evening and try to address a couple of your comments. Before I address some of the specific questions about the cabin project that's being proposed at 6/8 and Long Branch, I'd like to just offer a couple of comments that have already been echoed, but I think are important for you all to understand. I have been with you since the beginning this evening, and the issue of housing and how we provide housing for our neighbors is fundamental to the challenges that we are facing. We are challenged across the board to ensure that we have housing for all of those in our community. And for those who did not attend the economic forecast here this last week, the concept of providing multifamily housing could not have been more demonstrated in terms of conversation about what our community needs to do. And we are collectively trying to address a national problem, certainly a local problem. And I want to commend the City of Grover not only for its partnership with us for many years, but in fact for its far-reaching vision. Many of our efforts started back in 2017. I want to commend the police chief for looking at issues with regard to transitional age youth. We've tried to address this issue on a number of bases, and I'm very thankful for the partnership we've had with the city and the vision of city leadership, both elected and city staff, in terms of trying to affect what is really, as City Manager Bronson said, an intractable issue. That said, the issue of housing and housing production is fundamental. We are trying to address that at a variety of levels. And if you are not aware, a city or community where the cost of housing burden exceeds 32% dramatically accentuates the propensity of people to fall into homelessness. And I don't mean this to be too complex, but I do want you to understand that at last check, we were at 38% here in the county, which means we have passed the tipping point, and we have an accentuated acceleration of people falling into homelessness. So from our perspective here at the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, we're dealing not only with the issue of trying to keep people in their housing, but in fact, an increasing challenge of people falling into homelessness. To some degree, I will say it's a walnut game. Every time I house someone, I'm pretty sure somebody else is going to be walking through our door telling us that we do not have the housing for them. So that said, let me go on to answer a couple of questions with regard to what the city is doing, what we have been trying to work with the city to effect, and where I think we are going. We have been working with the city in terms of trying to address some of the issues around encampments in the city. We are well aware of the challenges around fires and some of the health aspects taking place at some of the encampments. Our staff have been out there on a regular basis trying to offer connection to services. The lack of housing has been a challenge. The affordability, the aspect of emergency housing vouchers or other public services have been a problem because it simply is too little. And yet we are making headway. That said, we are not, I guess my point would be, it's not that what we're doing is wrong. It's that it's not sufficient. And that's probably the greatest challenge for our outreach folks is we want to help connect people with housing, but we don't have the housing resources to connect them with. Now, there are a number of other issues that people are facing. We're very excited about, for example, the medically assisted treatment facility that's going to be opening at 40 Prado shortly. Expanded drug and alcohol service, the fact that we have this new cabin program at the county facility at 16th and Longbridge, which will allow us to co-locate some of our drug and alcohol services, I think is a tremendous step forward. But we are a small community dealing with a huge issue across our country and certainly across our community. We to just address some of the questions that were asked, we are indeed going to be looking at some level of Grover Beach preference, but as City Manager Bronson noted, the funding that we have is federal. It requires us to provide countywide services, not necessarily a preference for Grover Beach. That said, those that are homeless, and therefore they don't necessarily have a city of residence. So we will certainly be working within South County to address that primarily. Our responsibilities here with Five Cities are important in that we are addressing the needs of those from Avila Beach to Napomo. That will not exclude others from our community and in the county from participating in the program, but we will indeed be trying to focus certainly on those who are unsheltered in South County. As City Manager Bronson noted, we do not have a shelter here in South County that we have, might actually have other services for elsewhere in the county. The cabins, and let me just clarify the concept of pallet because I think people are a little confused about what this is about. The company that we are proposing to purchase these cabins from is called Pallet Shelter. And they are out of Seattle. It is a model where, in fact, the fabrication of the unit is, in fact, in small pieces, and the cabin itself can go up literally within an hour. And so while they're called pallet cabins, they're not made of pallets, and it is certainly not anything less than really what I think is a tremendous opportunity, which is they are small cabins of 1 to 2 to 4 beds, 100 square feet, that can go up quickly, but are made of inorganic material that don't mold. They're really quite structurally sound and come with heating. They come with carbon monoxide units. They come with fire suppression, fire extinguishers, et cetera. The reason we have chosen the 100 square foot cabins is that not only do they actually have 4 bunks in them, but because they are more conforming to the state building code. We have had to go to the county, and the county has amended its building ordinance to allow us to construct these units. But under the state of California's emergency housing prescription, as opposed to normal housing units. And so we've gone for the larger unit, which is 100 square foot, as opposed to 64 square foot unit. And our intent is, as City Manager Bronson has said, to occupy them with one or two occupants, or if in fact we have a larger household, that we would have the ability to go up to four units. But that said, our intent is really focusing on one to two units. We are not planning to ramp up immediately 100%. We want to take this in phases based on capacity and threshold. But we have planned this facility to go on the county campus there at 60th and Long Branch. We are currently in the process of going through a variety of processes for environmental design, electrical design, et cetera. That's the phase that we are in currently. We will be making steps to go forward shortly, but before we actually begin the construction process, we want to make sure that we have everything in place from an engineered standpoint. One of the questions was asked about a GoFundMe campaign, and I want to kiss you, council member, I believe it was Roberts, for asking that question. I mean that very euphemistically, but we have in fact received a lot of interest from our community about sponsoring this program. And we are actively working at trying to identify how best to do that. So we will be shortly rolling out a Sponsor Me Cabin program, or a Help Me Plant a Tree program. One of the things that we want to ensure is that we have some landscaping that makes this an attractive place, not only for those residing on the property, but also for the neighborhood that may be looking upon it. I applaud our police chief for his foresight in terms of working with county sheriff, in terms of setting up some concerns, addressing some concerns around public safety, and we're anxious to work with him on that. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And since the announcement a month ago, I'm sure people are saying, well, what happened to that? Well, we are truly in the bricks and mortar. What do we need to do to dig in the dirt situation? But we will be shortly providing more information as we're going forward. Lastly, I will say, yes, we are going to accommodate pets. That is certainly one thing that we have heard. And with regard to the maps, we are looking for a main egress off of the property from the south side of the property, but in consultation with the Five Cities Fire Authority, we will be having relief gates at all four corners of the property to ensure that if there need to be a public access, that we have that ability. So with that, I'll close my comment. Thank you for your indulgence of your time. I'll stay on board for any questions that may come up. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Let's see if there's any specific questions of you from council members. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you have any questions. So thank you for that update. That was very comprehensive and always good to see the next steps in a process. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Really, the only question I have at this point in time is if Ms. Nichols would like to give the Five Cities Homeless Coalition website address so people can go there. They are interested in this program or any others of your, any of your other programs.
Am I back?
Oh, there you are. Yes.
Certainly our, thank you. Our website is 5chc.org. That's cat.org. And we certainly, we have a contact page. We certainly welcome any communications from the community and as well. One of the questions I have received is with regard to sanitation issues in the camps. And I didn't specifically address that particular aspect of where we've been working with the city. But I think if you'll indulge me for just a moment, that's a huge challenge. this, we have been working with our outreach teams to be in communication with folks that are living in the camps. I will tell you, it is a challenge for our outreach workers when we don't have housing options or shelter options to provide these folks. So making engagement, making change is a challenge. We are definitely talking to them about cleanup, et cetera. I commend the city for providing us what am I going to call the sanitation boxes, et cetera, to provide opportunities for people to throw away their trash. That has been, in some regards, very successful thus far, and I think it has worked to mitigate some of the challenges. But if we are not to provide shelter and we do not have the housing, it is very difficult for us to move people forward. And I say that on a personal level for my agency, and it's a collective level for our community. Without shelter and without housing, we have limited options. I'll conclude there. Thank you.
Very good. Let's see if there's any other questions for Ms. Nichols. I see Councilmember Roberts, but as he unmutes himself to ask the question, I will invite anyone that wants to call in under public comment on this item to do so at 805-321-6639. And now I'll turn to Councilmember Roberts for his question.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Ms. Nichols, for all that you do. You're a force to be reckoned with the homeless, and we certainly appreciate it. I recently was at a newly formed neighborhood watch program over on Margarita, not far from my residence, and quite a few people showed up. It was a very good meeting, and they have a problem between Charles Street turns into Margarita there. And the homeless people come through the neighborhood, and as council's seen the letter we received tonight, they mark with chalk on the sidewalks and how to get to this location, and that's where the encampment is. And some of them had suggested because it's city property there, I believe, that we put up a fence there to keep them out between the two houses. It's a large lot. And I'm not so sure, this is a question for the city as well, that we could even put a fence there legally. And if we did, Ms. Nichols, do you think that they would just cut the fence and access it anyway? Would it be something that would probably be a waste of time and money, city money? What's your opinion on that?
And perhaps before Ms. Nichols responds, maybe let's turn to Mr. Bronson or Chief Peters for their input before Ms. Nichols responds.
Thank you. Actually, if I could have the police chief maybe speak to some of the challenges we see with that particular issue. I think, once again, the work we're doing is in cleaning, it's in trimming vegetation. We're not permanently removing encampments from that general public space. Mm-hmm. So I think just with that caveat in mind, I'll ask the police chief maybe to weigh in further on this.
Thank you, Matt. We've had a few issues in the area with folks that are walking to and from the encampment site. Including recently in the last week, we had some thefts from unlocked vehicles during the overnight hours in that particular area in the north side of town, so that we've been paying attention to. But our staff's been going down there with the Homeless Coalition staff. We were down there this morning as well into the encampment area and working with people and trying to get resources to people. We have been doing the extra patrols on Margarita Avenue and North 6th and Charles Street. So we have been paying attention to that and seeing how we can help alleviate some of the issues. But as for the fencing on that parcel of land, I'd have to defer to the other city staff to see if that is actually city-owned land and what could be done in order to secure that parcel.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. And so now I'll turn back to Ms. Nichols to see if there's anything she wanted to add to those responses.
I think what I would... Am I on again?
Yeah, yes, you are.
I think what I would add is I think we've seen that fencing is not particularly productive. A fence was put up around 5 years ago when the last cleaning happened, and so if people want to be there, they're going to be there. And my experience has been that a fence is not particularly a deterrent. That said, I want to let the community know that we are out there on virtually on a daily basis, discussing the various issues with folks, and we are certainly trying to convey the opportunities for them to engage in services. There are a variety of individual issues that may be affecting their choices about how to do that, and I don't mean to suggest that people are not open to services, but again, the challenge of housing and how one acquires housing and is stably housed is certainly a question. And for those that have been out for a while, the continued disappointment does have an effect. Now, that said, I also understand that people make choices, and there may be a reason why they are not able to stably retain housing, and our goal obviously is to help them try to mitigate those challenges. I think the last thing I would say is with regard to one of the things I omitted was with regard to our winter warming center, and City Manager Bronson, I think, made a couple of comments about that. We do not have any ongoing shelter here in South County, and in fact, the Winter Warming Center, as you know, has moved multiple times without a permanent home. Whether we provide that on a winter inclement weather basis or whether we provide that year-round is really a matter of community leadership, not just you all, but truly the will of the people in terms of determining what level of services we should be providing, but we are certainly standing by to be a partner in that. We are finalizing permits currently to open our winter warming center at the South County Regional Center here in the next couple of weeks. We have made an arrangement with the with the South County Chamber of Commerce, and we are in the process of a permitting process with the county. This will be our second season, at least partial season, there at the South County Regional Center. And we are doing that with the support of actually all of our cities, not only the city of Rover Beach, but also Pismo and Aurora Grande and the county, recognizing that sheltering in particular during the inclement weather months is an important thing. And in fact, our greatest concern during the winter months is in fact that people do not perish due to lack of shelter. That is a challenge that we have, which is the nexus to housing. So our cabin program that we're looking at from 16 to Long Branch is the transitional thing where we can move people actually from housing, hopefully into permanent housing. But as was mentioned earlier, San Luis Obispo County has a tremendous challenge just in sheltering those who are unsheltered in our county. We have an exceptionally high percentage of those who are homeless, who are living without shelter. And it is really difficult to engage folks in those circumstances. Again, I'll conclude unless there are additional questions.
Very good. Thank you for those comments and that update, Ms. Nichols. Let's see by unmuting of yourself, council members, if there's any other questions for Ms. Nichols. Seeing no one unmute themselves, say thank you to Jana and to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition in its entirety for the work that you do. We do have other members of the public on the line for public comment. So let's see if any of those generate any questions for Ms. Nichols. If so, we'll capture all those at the end and see if Ms. Nichols can join us one more time to answer any questions that may arise. But let's go ahead and open up public comment on this item. I will invite it at 805-321-7000. 6639. And I'll turn to our city clerk. I understand we have Supervisor of the District 3, Supervisor Dawn Ortiz-Legg, on the line with us. And I invite her to make some comments, please.
The council. Oh, hi. Thank you, Mayor Lee, and to the council, and also to City Manager Bronson, and to the police chief and everyone on staff for this comprehensive report. I want to salute you for all the work that you're doing. I know it takes a village, and I know your village of Clover Beach has been very much engaged, and that's exactly what we need in order to try to address this. I feel like, you know, we at the county, we have much to do. We couldn't do what we're doing at this point without you. But particularly, I wanted to note that this undertaking of the pilot program is enormous. And Five Cities Homeless Coalition, with Jana's leadership, it's just nothing to be looked at anything less than an enormous effort, because the permits and all of that, which was actually talked about earlier in the night, actually just for something like this temporary shelter is pretty significant. And, you know, I want to salute her for that, but also how important it is for the community to give us feedback. My office in particular, I'm very open to hear any feedback from the community. Because it's a pilot program, we really need it to be successful. So what's, you know, each stakeholder that's involved here, whether it's from the police chief, whether it's from community members or any of the staff there, the county needs to hear back from you on, you know, positives, negatives, all of that, so we can make this work. Everything else has been said, but I just wanted to, I'm listening, and I just wanted to thank you all for your work. And I hope to support in any way possible from our office, as well as from our overall county planning and building and public works and everybody else that's involved in this. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Let me turn real briefly to the council members to see if there's any specific county related questions regarding that. So go ahead and unmute yourself if you do have a question for Supervisor Ortiz-Legg. Very good. Not seeing anyone unmute themselves. We'll say thank you to the supervisor for joining us for those comments. And we appreciate the partnership between the city, the county, and the Five Cities Homeless Coalition on this and many other specific projects. So very good. Let me turn back. You're welcome. Thank you. Let me turn back to our city clerk and see if other folks have joined us on the line for public comment on this item.
Yes, we have Sabrina Cox.
Hi, thank you, council members. I live here on Margarita. I was at the last meeting. And since that last meeting, I do want to echo what Supervisor Ortiz has said and thank Councilmember Robert for congregating with us and hearing our voices and our concerns. And it was very promising. And we also had a police officer there as well. And there was probably, you know, a good 30 of us there that all shared kind of the same concerns. And it was interesting hearing the different pockets of where things are happening. And so definitely echoing the concerns of theft. And I do want to applaud and congratulate the work that was swiftly done on El Camino Real. Very impressed. And I also read the report and was surprised at about a $78,000 cost. I could be wrong, but a cost to clean that up and the cost that it would have to have pallets. And so just staying on top of this and moving forward to provide that housing and using that money to give people in need the housing and the shelter and the services that they need. I also saw the Five City Coalition there this morning as well, and still seeing tents, but definitely not what it was before. So just concerns, again, just the increased foot traffic and theft. And again, just want to thank you for your time, for listening to us and moving forward with the time and your what you have available to you with your time. And thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments, Ms. Cox, and appreciate your input. And I'll turn back to our city clerk to see if there's anyone else in the line for public comment.
Yes, we have Annabelle and Robert Healy.
Hi, this is Annabelle, and I just want to thank all of the council members and Five Cities Coalition for your wonderful report, very detailed. I have a question, and my husband Brian also, I believe, has a question. So there was a point regarding that a lot of the unhoused previously have refused temporary shelters or shelter because of they weren't allowed to bring their pets. And I'm wondering, with this new pilot program, which sounds great, and I hope to see it expanded, if there are any other requirements that would potentially be obstacles in people housing themselves there, such as lifestyle requirements, like is sobriety a prerequisite and so forth. I'm just wondering what the rules will be, if there will be any. I do want to say that I am very thankful for the extensive cleanup that has already happened. I'm concerned, though, to what end and how often can we afford $75,000 a pop to clean up an ongoing problem? And I hope that, I don't know, it becomes maybe perhaps a permanent line item, but also to what end? So thank you very much.
Very good. Appreciate those comments. Did that capture both the comment from both you and your husband, or did he want to speak as well? I will anticipate that captured both of their questions, and we will have those answered at the end of our public comment. But I'll turn back to our city clerk and see who else is on the line for public comment on this item.
We have no one else on the line for this comment.
Very good. Thank you for that. And we'll go ahead and close public comment on this item and bring it back to the council for any comments. But before I do that, let me turn to Mr. Bronson and or to Ms. Nichols to see if there was responses or answers to the questions that from Ms. Healy regarding obstacles for participation, such as sobriety or other rules. So I'm not sure if Mr. Bronson or Ms. Nichols would like to provide that information.
I will defer to Ms. Nichols on the response regarding the requirements at the cabin facility, but I do want to respond to a comment regarding the cost of the cleanup. There are a couple of comments about that, and certainly as the chief executive officer of the organization overseeing our budget, the cost of this work is something that I am very focused on. And I do have some concern about how we go forward. The cost of inaction is also very significant. And I am mindful of that. I'm mindful of the major city goal we have of keeping our areas clean. And just to be transparent with the council, that as we go forward, and assuming this continues to be a priority for our city, there will be an ongoing cost to this level of work that goes on. This is just one particular cleanup effort. Once we go over to Ramona Park and other facilities, we'll have additional efforts we have to take on as well. The goal is that we can steer more and more people towards services and housing, and we reduce the impacts in our public spaces, but there will be most likely an ongoing cost as we continue to deal with this issue that faces all of us across our communities. We'll be working with the county, working with state government on additional funding sources. But just to underscore that I am concerned about the cost as well, believe me. But we have to take on this work because our community requires it, and we have to be able to have our community functioning as best as possible. On that end, I'll turn over to Ms. Nichols to talk about the facilities requirements over at the cabins.
Very good. Let me turn to our city clerk and see if Ms. Nichols has been brought back into the queue or if she's able to join us.
Am I with you?
There you are. Yes.
There I am. Okay. There. Thank you very much. And I appreciate. I just want to pause and commend not only the city and its community. The dialogue around this issue is a very, very difficult issue, and I remain humbled by the conversation and the sensitive conversation that happens, even with those who are adversely affected. And I just want to express my appreciation, because I appreciate that this is a very difficult and visceral issue, and I appreciate the compassion with which even the comments of our public folks have expressed. So we are in the process of redefining or defining the programs. We are looking at a variety of models that have been piloted throughout the state. We have been looking not only up in Santa Cruz, but also down in San Fernando, in the San Fernando Valley, and elsewhere, in looking at how to address this. Our fundamental issue is that we want to provide people, regardless of whatever their barrier is, an opportunity to come in and engage in this process and work towards sustainable public, not public housing, but sustainable long-term housing. That said, there are a variety of issues, and we are exceptionally excited about the fact that we are co-located there on the campus with County Drug and Alcohol, County Public Health, the state court system. And so we're actively looking as we define what this program will be to ensure that we can best take advantage of those opportunities, as well as outreach opportunities in the community to drive that. So there are no prescriptive barriers to engaging in the program, with the exception that anyone with a violent criminal background or someone who has been convicted of drug production, meth production, will be prohibited. That's by virtue of the federal statute of where the funding is coming from. That said, we also know that this is not a let me come and be there. We are really hoping that we will be able to move people from homelessness into housing. And so if there is any prerequisite, it's simply an intent to make a transformation of change. And we want to work with them at whatever level they're at, and try to provide the best opportunity of services we can to make that change. And so there's no prerequisite in terms of coming in, other than ensuring that people are kind to one another. We want to ensure that as there are 20 or 40 residents on this property, that in fact we are being kind and gentle to one another, as well as our community at large. But it's not a matter of you have to be sober, you have to be this. It's really a matter of to what degree we can help you make a transformative change. And so we're working at kind of refining what that means and how that works out. Initially, we're looking at kind of a referral process. We have a number of folks that we're talking about in the various encampments that we're already talking to, saying, would this be a program of interest to you? But we are also looking at some of the best practices around the state and across the West Coast to see how best we can be most effective. Some of our partners, including those that have already done this before, Good Samaritan Shelter down in Santa Maria had a very effective program that they implemented in Isla Vista. And so we're consulting with them about how best to help make this change. But ultimately, it comes down to, do we have a housing alternative for folks? And how can we help them stabilize to get into that housing? And that's where really ensuring that we have more multifamily housing and that we have more landlords willing to work with us is critical. We are there to help both the client and the landlord find a stable and long-term housing solution. But if we don't have those units, we are terribly limited by what we can do.
Very good. I appreciate that that information. So, and the kind of the operational parameters with which the mission of this location is going to be providing. So before we go to council member comments on this item or any potential direction, even though this is a receive and file, I wanted to give the police chief just a moment, and I know even without me warning him, he'll do a great job of responding to my question or my comment. One of our public commenters talked about the Neighborhood Watch program and the organizational meeting that happened just a couple weeks ago that Councilmember Robert also was participatory in. And so I wanted to give the chief an opportunity to speak of the advantages of a Neighborhood Watch. I know you've done this once or twice before for us, but want to give you another opportunity just to extol the virtues of the program and how neighborhoods can begin participating in such a program.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, the neighborhoods throughout the city could actually start Neighborhood Watch programs. It's a very simple process. We have information on our website on how to do it. It's a application that gets filled out and turned into the police department, and we will help coordinate with the individuals who want to start that Neighborhood Watch program a meeting within their neighborhood. We will send representatives up there and be able to share information with those people that want to have a Neighborhood Watch. Then a block captain is generally designated, and that block captain actually takes over the responsibilities for either hosting or organizing meetings within the neighborhood. But the benefits are the sharing of information that you get back and forth, not only from your neighbors, but also from the police department. A lot of the Neighborhood Watches are moving on to Nextdoor programs or social media platform programs right now in order to share information with each other quite readily. So we're looking forward to starting some more programs throughout the community. We did have that meeting in the Marguerite area this last couple of weeks ago. We did receive an application to start the Neighborhood Watch from up in that area from Miss Anita Schauer. So we will be looking forward to having some more programs. So if anybody wants to start a Neighborhood Watch program, they're welcome to call the police department or go on our website and take a look. There are several links under the police department's webpage about starting a program.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate that. So with that, we've had a lot of information and a very good update tonight, but I do want to give council members just a moment before we conclude this item to see if there's any last comments that you want to say on this item. But go ahead, unmute yourself if you have a desire to provide some comments. Councilmember Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Chief. Thank everyone involved. Really, I mean, this is, as everyone knows, it's a nationwide problem. And until we get our facilities back open to help with the people that are really can't be housed, they're mentally unstable and they're alcoholics or drug addicts, choose not to want to be housed. They like the way they live, the style. They need extra help. I mean, it's something that we can't provide all the time. And when we shut these facilities down decades ago, I think it was just terrible. And until we as a society help take care of these people and open those facilities back up, we're going to always have a problem, even though we're going to have a problem anyway. And I think the cost of cleanup will come down. I think this was the initial cleanup, and that's probably why it was so expensive. But the areas, not that we want them to be permanent areas, or we've even talked about turning that into some type of Bob Jones Trail, and those are ideas the community has to make it something that everyone can enjoy. And we don't want them there living there permanently, but as long as they're there, we need to support as far as cleanup, so the health of them and the people around there and the safety, the fires and all that can be controlled and monitored. So all the community that's helping and getting these Neighborhood Watch programs are very helpful. And we thank you for all that you do in that area as a community. anyway, that's my two cents. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Let's go see by unmuting of yourselves if there's any other comments. I see Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, sir. Just didn't have the chance to weigh in very much before, and just literally wanted to say this is a situation that has really few defined solutions, but I wanted to thank Mr. Bronson, executive staff, and specifically Five Cities Homeless Coalition for doing so much now and in the future just to find ways to make it better, to try to find somewhere near those solutions. So thank you for all you're doing. I look forward to seeing what's next, and these are amazing first starts. So thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, sir. So, Councilmember Miller, Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you, Mayor. I would just be echoing my colleagues here. I think we are making a good effort and taking steps in the right direction. There's still yet a lot of work to be done, but we'll get there.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Well, I'll just echo those sentiments as well. I really do appreciate all that is being done. And I'm really looking forward to maybe seeing if we can put a dent in this situation, at least in here, where we're having issues now. So thank you to everyone who's been involved in this. Thank you.
Very good. And I'll just close by echoing those same comments of appreciation for staff and for Five Cities Homeless Coalition, but also to members of the community who have been vocal but respectful. And so I think the fact that we as a city have been able to be responsive is a testament to why our public is so respectful when it comes to difficult tasks like this, because I think there is an inherent understanding that we will do as a city what we can to solve any problem. And I think that that continues. And the more that, whether it's the neighborhood watches, whether the respectful comments, whether participation in fundraisers to benefit the coalition or other nonprofit organizations locally, I think it just kind of continues to show that Grover Beach is a can-do, will-do city. And with that, I will go ahead and close the discussion on item number 8 and turn to our public comment section in this section of our agenda and invite folks to call in at 805-321-6639, where we will allow members of the public that wish to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So let me turn back to our city clerk and see if there are members of the public who want to speak at this time.
Yes, we have Mr. Weisong.
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, John A. Watson. I'd like to thank Mr. Robert because I called him a while back and I asked him to do something about from the restroom to the boardwalk, and it was sand and my four-wheeler won't go through that. And so he had somebody to pave it, and there's been 20 people, women, men, dogs, that have commented on how nice it is to be able to walk without walking through the sand from the restroom to the boardwalk. So, Mr. Roberts, thank you. Thank you. Now, I have to stop and let people go by because of the ice plant. So you need to send somebody up there and chop that, cut that, so that it's two-way. It doesn't bother me to stop, but it does bother me to cross over it with my four-wheeler. And that needs to be done. I go up on top, and there's benches up there, but you don't see like you do to the south of it, right on top. And I made a statement to Mr. Roberts about a bench should be put up there because people were standing there by the dozens watching the whales. I can't see them, but they did. And so if you did put a bench up there, and since I've been here longer than a week, I'd like to have my name on that. I think I deserve that. And I also think I should have my name on Brighton and Oak Park. Because there is no place in the United States of America that I've been, I've covered them all, that is so dysfunctional. And you talk about friendly traffic. That's not friendly. Everybody on the street goes to 16th and goes up to Saratoga or down. They don't make left turns anymore there. So why don't you just put a board across there? Like down there at Crown Hill, there used to be a board across that street where you couldn't go up. I think, and put my, if you do that, put my name on that and put Wysong Brighton on there. You know, the kids someday won't know because they're not taught common sense anymore in this world. And it bothers me that I came home on a boat and I came home in an airplane over those oceans. And I went by a boat twice across there. And you know, they, planes and trains didn't work very good in the 1950s.
Very good. Thank you, John.
But I made it. And I'm, yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Always good to hear your voice and welcome back to public comment. And thank you for your input. So let me turn back to our city clerk and see if there's anyone else on the line for public comments at this time.
No, we have no one else on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the council for our council committee reports. Let me turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright first, because I understand she may be having a technical difficulty or two. And so let's see how long she can last before those technical difficulties get the best of her.
Thank you. Well, I think I've switched to my phone now. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, very good. So I should be okay, I hope. So did you want me to go forward with?
Yes, please.
Council communications? Is that where we are?
Actually, council committee reports.
Council committee reports. Thank you. Okay. I was concentrating on getting myself back to this meeting. Thank you. I had a slow regional transit authority meeting. And for everyone out there, at this point in time, they have 5 full-time and 9 part-time unfulfilled positions. So if anyone's looking for a job and you have a decent driving record, they really need you. The other item of interest is they are getting ready to move into the new facility. Well, that is coming along, actually, slightly ahead of schedule. So there's a ribbon cutting that has been scheduled for mid-January. However, that facility, there's been over $1 million in concrete that was poured for that facility, just kind of mind-boggling to me. And then the last item of interest is there was some ARP funding received, a total of $2.1 million to the region. So that will help along the lines of this new facility and other things. And that is, I believe, the only, yes, it is, I've got a Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting and an air pollution control meeting both on Wednesday. So I'll have that information for you at our next meeting. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that. Next, I'll go to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I've not had a committee meeting since our last council meeting. Nothing to report at this time.
Very good. Thank you for that report. Next, I'll go to Councilmember Roberts.
No, they canceled the meeting for this month for some reason, so I'll have a report for next month. Thank you.
Very good. Next to you, Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you. No committees to report since the last meeting. Thank you.
Very good. And the only committee I've had since our last meeting has been the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. We did have an update on the redundancy project. It is virtually on schedule. There's been a couple of delays that have resulted from material deficiencies or material delivery delays, but there's all indication that out of a 2.5 year project, that 8 days of delay is very manageable at this time and is very able to be made up through the course of the project. So one of the other updates that was associated with that, with the redundancy project out at the treatment plant, is the fact, if you recall, that a community workforce agreement has been included in the construction of that. And we did have an update as to how that CWA is functioning and is operating. And the goal of the program was to have a minimum of 30% local hire provision as part of the all of the trades that are being worked on site. And actually, in practicality, in actuality, we are actually closer to 60% of local workers being utilized on that project site. It's I think it's just about 58%. So we are ahead of schedule with that. So we are successfully employing local labor force to build that project and to make sure that we're meeting the criteria within the community workforce agreement. So that is very good news on that front. So I will then turn to our League of California Cities, which I don't have any updates on that. And I'll turn to Mr. Bronson just to make sure if he has any updates on any league matters.
No, sir, I do not.
Very good. I will go ahead and bring it back to Council Communications. Kind of go, if I can remember, the same order. I'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Yes, I did have some communication. One in particular was from a person who lives in my development here. We're off the pike in between Oak Park and 16th Street, South Oak Park, South 16th Street. And she had commented about the speed on the pike, which we see it, but I know for some reason there's not a, anyway, that doesn't matter. So her suggestion was, there are, gosh, I don't know how many, there's a new bike lane that had been put in and so on the pike, or had been painted, I should say. On the north side of the street, when you're heading west, there's probably 5 or 6 poles, maybe even more, that say bike lane on it. And that is probably the span of maybe 2 city blocks. Her suggestion was, why not utilize one of those signs instead of having 5 or 6 or how many there are that say bike lane? If we could use one of those poles and install a speed limit sign. So that was her question there. And then also possibly a speed dip, I believe, is how she... I don't have access to my email anymore, so I'm not exactly sure what she called it, but it was like a speed dip to maybe slow down the traffic. So I'm hoping that maybe we might be able to get some kind of consensus for at least maybe a speed sign. I don't know. So that's my one. And then second of all, I wanted to thank Mr. Hale. I had there was a question regarding a public comment that we had received and possible meeting, and he was very helpful in helping me get my facts straight on that, and I just want to thank him very much for doing that and being so prompt about it. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate those communications. Let me turn to the city manager just to see if he understands the question from Ms. Bright and see if there's an opportunity to have staff take a look at that. I don't think we need consensus from the council to have staff review the street, or would you prefer that? How would you like to approach that?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If the council wanted to concur with what Mayor Pro Tem Bright is suggesting, we can take a look at this at the staff level and look at a speed limits sign in addition to what's already there. I'll note that we did lower the speed limit on the Pike because the speeds have come down from where they used to be. So I think if we can look at ways to help further remind drivers of that requirement, then we'll take a look at that and report back to the council with your concurrence.
Very good. And I'm guessing that unless someone unmutes themselves, we'll consider that concurrence. Very good. I will take that as concurrence to kind of take a look at those operational considerations. Let me turn next to, I think it was Councilmember Rushing. I don't remember how my order was last time, but I'll go to Councilmember Rushing for communications.
Well, I think I just got to jump in line, but I'm okay with that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One thing I just wanted to talk about, while I didn't have a meeting specifically with the South County Chamber of Commerce since our last meeting, did want to share a little bit of exciting news from them. They're having their last membership mixer of the year. Like literally all of their mixers at this point, you can attend should you choose. I'll get to that in a moment. But they're calling this one a Friendsgiving, which I think is fantastic. This is going to be the last of their mixers of the year. It is this coming Wednesday, November 17th. From 5 to 7 p.m., and it is all about Grover Beach this time. This is going to take place at GB Eats, the super awesome food truck space where we have amazing burritos and vegetarian hamburgers and some killer chicken, a whole bunch of other things along those lines. On top of that, though, the Chamber is sponsoring a special prize. So it's a Shop Grover Beach Day. So literally, I'm going to read this so I don't mess it up, but every Grover Beach receipt increases your chances of winning a valuable prize. Prizes include $150 to the Spoon Trade, $50 at Red Bee Coffee, and more. So Epic Entertainment will be catering the event. Great chance to network, meet your neighbors, get some killer appetizers, and listen to some great music. And that's all I've got this time. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you so much for that that update. I look forward to seeing as many people as possible on the 17th.
Oh, actually, I'm so sorry. One other thing on that one. If you are interested in signing up with your one time, you can call at 805-489-1488 or email them at info@southcountychambers.com. And I promise I'm done. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you for that. Next, I'll go to Councilmember Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to clarify, excuse me, if Johnny Weissong's still listening, I did report the information you gave me, Mr. Weissong, to the proper authorities. Not so sure that they jumped on it that quick. I think it's more of a coincidence. And the bench, we're still working on that. I am trying to change and get him to change the name to Weissong by the Sea, but they're not going for that either. But that's all I had to report. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Next, I'll go to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mary Lee. I did have some interaction with some residents who were concerned about the street sweeping and the sweeping without use of water. So after speaking with City Manager Bronson, it's clarified that we actually don't want the trucks to utilize water when sweeping our streets. And so I'll get back to the residents with this information. I think that's it for me.
Very good. Appreciate that. I do have several updates or council communication. So we did reactivate or restart the Coffee with the Council. I will let our city manager kind of report on that, but I'll just say that it was great to be out at Red Bee over the weekend with Councilmember Miller and with the opportunity to talk with a number of residents about issues that impact them. So, but in no particular order, there's a number of fundraisers or opportunities for people to support the community. The first of which is on Wednesday, November 10th, there is the Tip-A-Cop events, and it is a pickup event for a tri-tip dinner through I believe it's the Special Olympics and the Sheriff organization. And I know that members of our police force have always been very active in participating in that. So look forward to participating there and pick up is at Pismo Outlet. And perhaps if the chief is still around, either he or the city manager can let us know how to purchase tickets for that. So there is another opportunity for Giving Tuesday, which this year is going to be November 30th. And this is supporting of Five Cities Homeless Coalition by Finn's Restaurant. So you can purchase tickets by visiting 5chc.org. And I love the fact that Gianna mentioned it's 5 Cat Hairy Cats. For additional information on the Giving Tuesday event. If you like live theater and you've been missing live theater, there is a fundraiser this coming Saturday, November 13th, for the Arroyo Grande High School Theater Program, and that is at 7 o'clock at the high school. You can visit the Arroyo Grande High School Theater Facebook page for more information on that. And then lastly, my last point of a moment of the council communication is that I was contacted and had the privilege of presenting a proclamation in honor of World War II veteran, United States Marine Corps veteran, John L. Robertson III. It was his 100th birthday over the weekend, and the veteran vehicle salute that they provided to him was moving and very touching. I got an opportunity to participate in that and to read a proclamation on behalf of the city to his family. He's 100. He has 3 living children, a granddaughter, as well as 3 great-grandchildren. And so they celebrated his 100th birthday, still very spry and active. And I hope that I'm as active as he is at 100. And then one of his sons, Chase, was also honored as a retired Army veteran as well. So always some of the best things that I get to do as mayor are provide those proclamations and to really enjoy folks that have lived in our city for so long and have participated and have lived life to the fullest and hopefully will continue to live life to the fullest. So with that, I'll turn over to our city manager, or perhaps I'll go to our police chief first and see if he has some information on the Tip of Cop events for this Wednesday.
Actually, I'll take this one as well because Chief Peters is off the call now.
Ooh, but, I actually do see him. So he's right next to you.
Oh, there he is. My apologies. I was looking somewhere else. So Chief Peters, I will defer to you.
Okay. Thanks. Mr. Mayor, Matt, yes, the Tip of Cop South County event is this coming week on the 10th, or it is this week, the 10th, and you can order online through the Special Olympics website. It's kind of a long website address, but it's sosc.org/slowc/tipacop, and if you go to that website, you can pick which part of the county you want to be in. Obviously, if you're in the South County, you want to pick the South County. And then on that page, it will take you to an order page. You can place an order for pickup and schedule your time. It's pickup times are between 4:30 and 5:30, and the second pickup time will be between 5:30 and 6:30. So all proceeds are going to the Special Olympics to help our Olympians travel and attend their games and be successful. So look forward to everybody come on out.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. I did order my tickets today, so I'm sure I'll see you or other members of the Gore Beach force on Wednesday. So with that, I'll turn over to our city manager, Mr. Matt Bronson, for any reports and comments that he may have tonight.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. The hour is late, so I'll be brief and just a few comments. One is last week we did have our council districting workshop. Actually, 2 weeks ago, we had our council districting workshop to help provide more information to the community about how they can submit maps as part of our upcoming districting process. We have the recordings of the workshop on our website in both English and Spanish, so the public can see what was presented and can go through the map drawing process. We received over 30 maps submitted so far in the process, both through paper maps, electronically scanned in, sent to us, as well as using one of the online tools. So we're delighted that the community is engaging in this process. We'll be accepting maps through January 6th and sharing them with the public on January 17th in preparation for our next council public hearing on January 24th, when we'll be unveiling the draft maps as developed by our consultant, informed by the public submissions, as well as our communities of interest identified by the council. So the process is coming forward in January. Next to the mayor's point, last Saturday, we did have our reboot of the Coffee with Council event. I want to thank Mayor Lee and Councilmember Miller for joining in this resumption of the community outreach. We were over at Red Bee Coffee last Saturday morning, had great conversation with community members about a whole host of different issues. This is a monthly event that we'll be doing as we go forward. Next one will be on December 11th, location and time TBD. And I believe we'll have Mayor Pro Tem Bright and Councilmember Robert taking part in this next edition. And lastly, just to highlight that we have recently restriped Grand Avenue from 4th Street to 8th Street and 11th Street to Oak Park Boulevard. The restriping was necessary to refresh pavement markings that had been fading away over time and add bike lanes in two sections where bike lanes did not exist before. We also added green bike lanes at 13th Street and at Oak Park Boulevard to help better denote bicycle access as well. This restriping is not to take the place of repaving. That will come as well, as the council is aware. 4th Street to 8th Street will happen in a little over a year, and then 11th Street to Oak Park Boulevard coming up in a couple of years. But this restriping was necessary to better denote where people travel and to help add bike facilities where we didn't have them right now. So we're delighted in the work, and I think it'll be a great addition to Grand Avenue and a precursor of improvements to come. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir, for those updates. Next, I'll turn to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, see if he has any reports or comments he would like to share tonight.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have any for this evening.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. So with that, we don't have any closed session tonight, so we will consider ourselves adjourned until our next meeting. Thank you, everyone. Good work.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.